everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast. This is RPG Site's weekly podcast where we get the site staff together to talk about our favorite genre of video games. We have the full crew here with us for the last time in a long time. I'm your host. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, we have Josh Torres.
In the last August episode.
That's true. Is it? Yeah, it would be.
No, next we week have... would be August.
Yeah, it's August 30 or 31.
You're right.
Well, we'll record that on the 31st, but it won't go published until September.
So yeah, just have my random voice clip when I'm not here.
We have Adam Vitale.
Hello.
We have James Galizio.
Hey, folks.
And Chao Minwu.
Hello.
So, yep, we are recording this on August 24th. It has been probably like the second biggest news week for the year or so. Like, it was an insanely busy news week. Of course, Gamescom kicked off. We kind of teed that up last week. We had, of course, Jeff Keighley's Gamescom opening night live. Adam was out in LA with an Xbox event that was kind of supposed to be like a local for Americans Gamescom kind of proxy. A lot of other publishers and developers released trailers. I think there was a future game show put in there. Xbox, that of course had a bunch of live streams. A lot of games kind of showed up in a lot of different places, so we have a lot to cover. We're not going to try to cover it chronologically. We're going to try to cover it by title, and we're probably also not going to hit everything because there was a lot when I was trying to put together an outline, making sure that I tried to capture everything was a bit tough. Of course, we also had the big release of Black Myth Wukong this week. We did speak about that. Luckily, the embargo kind of lined up conveniently for us last week, so if you want to hear Josh's and a little bit of discussion on our review for that game, listen to last week's episode. We do, of course, have the written review up on the site, and Josh has put together some pretty thorough guides up on the site as well if you're playing through Black Myth Wukong, including a guide that shows what all the armor sets look like and how to get them. But yeah, we'll also talk about Adam's time in LA. And then at this point, I kind of teed this up in the introductions. Josh will be heading and covering PAX West for us, which is in the upcoming week. Scott will be there as well. We'll go into Gamescom. We have a couple people taking personal trips, so they'll be out. So
Nintendo just announced publicly their participation at PAX West, so now we can say that Josh will be playing Zelda before any of us.
Echoes of Wisdom, probably. And then we have a couple people taking some personal trips. Adam will be out mid-September, or I'll be out early September. Adam will be out late September. I think a few other people might be out, so we'll run with whoever we have throughout the next couple of weeks, but we will until
it'll
we know
be Chow alone for one of the episodes. It'll just be here.
There you go.
You Chow, you got it.
Damn, hard carry, Rip.
Yeah. I'll be like, here's my impressions of Genshin Impact on Xbox.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And November 20th. You know, the funniest thing is that game comes out on my brother's birthday.
I honestly forgot when that came out, other than it was just announced. We'll talk about that later.
I'll tell you what's the switchboard.
Yeah. So, of course, a lot of the news, we have some updates for games that were announced, a lot of dates for the back half of the year and early next year about release dates, demos, open betas, Steam Early Access, all those sorts of things. Of course, we'll have a lot of trailers that were shown at these different events. Obviously, an audio podcast is not the best avenue of discussion on video game trailers, but we'll do what we can, as we always do. So we'll just kind of play it by ear. In terms of how this podcast will be structured, it's going to be like 95% news, because that will be enough to keep us here probably for 3 hours, and we'll probably have to cut a few discussions short.
About it lasting 3 hours this early on? Oh my.
Have you seen what this outline looks like? You wrote most of these news stories.
Yeah, so. I actually see a few things that are like, oh, are we not covering this? Okay.
if you want to put it on the list, just I won't notice. Just throw it on there. So obviously whenever we publish this podcast, as you're listening to us, we'll try to make the timestamps as clear as possible. We do have one game that came out that we haven't talked about yet that I have played, that I talked about playing last week, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this for good reason. It's a niche audience. The newest expansion for Guild Wars 2 came out, called Janthir Wilds. This is ArenaNet's second kind of yearly mini expansion. So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I will say I'm going to basically just spend 10 minutes or so comparing it to the last expansion. So last year in August, Guild Wars 2 released Secrets of the Obscure, kind of a bit of a mouthful, but that was their first mini expansion in this new yearly cadence. It was received okay, except that the post-patch updates, I talked about this, I think, in June, were received pretty poorly. It felt like they were still adjusting to the new kind of scheme, the new kind of cadence of releases. So to try to state it at a high level for those that don't play this game, Secrets of the Obscure felt like to me that they tried to put in a full expansion in something that didn't have the resources behind it to really support that. And then with the post-release patches, they tried to do that again. So everything was super lightning pace. Nothing had any weight. Everything was like super like Reader's Digest version of events. It just didn't land very well. Nothing felt like it had stakes.
Was this the expansion where you went into the demon realm and like got rid of the bad demons but kept the good ones?
Exactly. And there was no nuance. There was no subtlety. There was no like, I kind of said this before, like, you know, the only way that this really lands in a poignant way is if there's like a giant betrayal at the end or something. Because if they play this straight as just like, hooray, you saved the demon realm, that would have just been like the lamest shit ever. But that's what they did. So the reason why I bring that up is not the poo-poo on Secrets of Obscure, but for Janthyr Wilds, part of the reason I can't really talk about it for much longer than 10 or 12 minutes is because they are taking it much more slowly. And what they're actually doing is that in the box release, so to speak, that released on the 20th, it doesn't tell the full story. It only it kind of tees you up to the area, to the lore and the area. And they're going to kind of follow up on that in a 3-month cadence with, you could think of it like of a 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, so to speak, which I think it makes it harder to talk about now because the story's not complete. But I also think that it's a much, much smarter move. The pacing is so much better. The dialogue actually feels like it gives time to like introduce you to new regions of the world, new characters, new factions, and not feel like you're on a Marvel movie on 2x speed sort of thing. And the map that they added, so how this works is that most updates will include a new map. And one of Guild Wars 2's biggest things that I can champion about it is that they put a lot of focus and care into making like their overworld map fun to explore. Basically, you can spend hours just talking to NPCs, doing events, handling quests, collecting things, getting new resources to build new armor, all those sorts of things. It's not just a vehicle to go from story instance to story instance. It's not supposed to be. In the last expansion, it kind of was. But here, like the first new map that they added, I've been playing the expansion for probably about 20, 25 hours, and I'm still like finding stuff in this map. So they did a really good job to say like, okay, let's slow the pace down. Let's actually like let everything kind of steep a bit. And
what is the new map? I am sort of familiar with Guild Wars World.
So in the Guild Wars overarching like canvas of a map, there's always been an area to the north called Janthyr, hence the name Janthyr Wilds. We know that Janthyr had, based on if whether or not you played Guild Wars 1 or 2, had some sort of connection to the White Mantle, the Mersat, the Titans. It was kind of like this place that everyone referred to, but you never got to visit. So it's one of those dangerous things where it's like something can almost be more interesting the less you know about it, where there's like an intrigue there. But then once you can visit, if it's lame, it's like, well, that's lame sort of thing.
So where is this place in relation to the Shiver Peaks? Like north of that?
West of it? Okay. It's like north
I was of the Divinity's I was thinking of the Shiver Peaks are the north place, right?
Yeah, it's like north of Kryta, north of Lion's Arch, Divinity's Reach, things like that. On the map, there was always like this big-ass river delta that you never got to visit, and now the first map is that river delta. So it's kind of been like, for a long-time player, or even someone who's just played Guild Wars 2, which has, you know, been out a long time, like, when do we get to visit that delta? That looks neat. And it's like, yep, now is the time. And they kind of try to do the same thing with Secrets of the Obscure with the Wizard's Tower. Like, finally, we can go in the Wizard's Tower. That was a place that's been kind of a mystery for years. And then we kind of visit it, and we're like, eh, that was kind of lame. Where here, they managed not to do that, where they're like, okay, you can finally visit it, and actually, it's pretty neat. There's more dialogue. I know some people have, to kind of give play devil's advocate, some of the early like story instances, the player just kind of sits back and has other people talk. There's a lot of voice acting in Guild Wars 2, and the early couple story instances, you might be listening to someone talk for 20 to 25 minutes, and some people said like, God, this is excruciatingly slow. So it's one of those things where if you don't know or not invested in the story, that could be a negative point, so to speak. Is like, if you just want to skip through it and get to like the good stuff, quote unquote, you got to sit through it. So that's kind of one thing where, depending on your opinion already, where you're coming from, that could affect how you feel about this game.
There's no skip button or skip cutscene or anything like that.
No, and I really think that they really should add one. But no, you have to sit through it. Voice acting. Yeah, you can't even like press a button to skip to the next line of dialogue.
Okay.
So that's one thing where I enjoyed it, but it's one of those things where I could easily see someone say like, "God, I spent an hour in a story mission and 40 minutes of it was talking." It's like, yeah,
but also like that player, like usually I won't skip those, but like I read really fast, so like I'm a person like skip to like the next line immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They added a lot of fun little new animals and for like rangers to tame, new mini pets, or even if you're not a ranger, you can have like a little mini pet. They added like they kind of, the one thing that's kind of hard to talk about here is that most of the, this is kind of like the story component of the expansion. Most of the post game end game stuff, like the treadmill stuff, is going to come in the first update. They're going to add a new raid in 3 months. They're going to add a new fractal in 6 months, I believe. They're going to add new legendary gear for you to like build and craft to in 3 months. There's a new legendary spear and things. And legendaries are basically like relic weapons, I think is the closest point of comparison. Basically top tier weapons with super flashy animations that you have to spend thousands of in-game gold to
build. But right now, what they've mainly added is like the main story, new main
story. Story, yeah. And even then, it's not all of the story. So if someone kind of would say, so you're going to ask, so if you play it right now, you're kind of getting half of an expansion. The answer truthfully is kind of yes. It does kind of feel like half of an expansion, but I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, because last time they tried to squeeze all of an expansion in and it felt super like, what's the Lord of the Rings term? Too little butter and too much bread. Like it was just super thin, super disposable in a way, or here it feels meaty, but only half of it.
Roughly like an hour count for people, like how much are they, content are they expecting then?
That really kind of depends on your play style. If you're planning just to play through only the story chapters and do nothing else, it's probably about, this is going to be a smaller number than I think most people realize, maybe 7 hours, 8 hours of story. Okay. Yeah. But then if you want to like do all the collections, build the new gear, mess with the new homestead, player housing system, explore the maps, do the side quests, then it's probably more like 35 hours.
Okay.
So it really kind of depends. And then of course, if you want to do some things but not others, then pick some number in between.
Did you mention a new housing system when you said that?
Yeah, so I haven't messed with it too much, but about a third of the way through the story, you get a homestead, and there was already a system for putting decorations into guild halls, but there was no player specific housing. So basically they've kind of, what they did is, the guild hall system was fine, but pretty limited. The housing system was completely revamped. So in terms of placing decorations, crafting decorations, the materials used to make them, like the economy behind them, all the tool sets needed to place them, modify them.
I asked because I remember a couple of my friends actually talking about like how cool the new housing system is in this expansion a few days back, where they had like alt characters that like you can actually place your alts inside your housing, so they would actually like chill out there and like have their own animation.
Yeah, so yeah, if you log into your warrior, then because the housing, it's account bound, so if you have eight characters, they share a house.
That's so cool.
Yeah, if you have your if you log into your warrior, go to your house and log off, and then log into your ranger and go to your house, your warrior will be chilling there. So it's pretty neat.
It also has like all the cats that you found, I guess, also in your housing as well.
I'm surprised that you know this much.
I was just listening to like what my friends were saying. That's cool.
when the game first launched, there was like, this is 2012. So this is eons ago. This is ancient history. It released with something called a home instance. This was like ghetto level housing, kind of. It was very bad.
But I don't remember any of it. So
you had a home instance, which was like something that you could log into, and some characters from the original story would show up there. You could collect cats, which was added a few years later. And these cats, each of them was like a micro quest kind of thing. Like, hey, if you find a cat in this map and bring it an apple from this other map, it will like you and follow you to your home instance. Like micro quests. There was maybe like 18 in total or so. And then you could also get like resource nodes. So craft economy in Guild Wars is kind of hard to describe in a short window, but you might have a resource node called Mithril, whatever, which is pretty common. And instead of going out to the world where Mithril can be found, you could get and eventually earn a node. And by node, something you'd run up to, press the interact key and mine. That would go into your home instance. So basically, it's like you could collect nodes, and then if you went through your home instance, you're like, there's my Mithril node, there's my gold node, there's my Elderwood tree, there's my whatever. And it kind of just give you like a random smattering of materials that you could just kind of collect in one centralized location rather than go out to the world and get it. And basically, that all that stuff that you had already earned was kind of transplanted to your new homestead. So it kind of feels like not everyone's starting from scratch. If you had earned it in the past, you can still make use of it. And some things like the nodes actually have function to them. Something like the cats are really just more for flavor, for fun. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that people had already earned over the years, you do get to kind of still make use of. It's not like, well, that's old content now. You know, everyone's back to square one. Like, no, you get to keep that. So that was implemented smartly. I've never been like a huge decorator, but for those that aren't huge decorators, you can kind of like get the new resources and the new maps that are used to build tables and chairs and doorways and decorations. And it's selling for decent prices, like in the in-game trading post. So it's like, okay, even if you're not going to make use of that yourself, you can kind of still benefit from it. Like, I'm not going to use these to decorate my place because I don't really, that's not what I play the game for. I've never really been a good decorator in Fallout or whatever. So I'm just going to, you know, make use of the fact that other people are and sell them all the materials. So it's fun enough. And basically, I think what I'll do at this point is I'll come back in 9 months once the 3 updates are out and just kind of follow back up with part 2 in a year from now about how the story actually concludes. Because it's like, you know, the story might conclude and be really, really bad. I don't know. Like, but I'm trying to be an optimist, but we're coming off an expansion where that's not what happened. Yeah. The last expansion, the post-patch updates really kind of muddled the story. I will say, though, that I've probably been talking longer than I gave myself. But the story, one thing that ArenaNet has seemingly deliberately decided not to do is I remember when that they first said that they were going to go to yearly expansions, that, oh, this way they can kind of make any expansion kind of a jumping in point, kind of like the way Elder Scrolls Online, I believe, does it, where even if you're not up to date, you can buy the last expansion and have an okay time. You don't have to like get ready for it or like catch up, so to speak. The thing is on a gameplay front, you can. There's nothing that says you have to do previous story to play the story in Jan Through Wilds. Nothing that's stopping you. However, there's enough crossover in terms of characters and storylines that you're just going to be completely lost. Like, you're going to be like, I have no idea who any of these people are. So you could, nothing's stopping you from doing it, but you're going to be like, I don't understand. This is boring. I don't get this. Who are these people? And then when they reference a thing, you're going to be like, is that a thing I should know? Is that a reference? I don't know. So they've deliberately decided to continuously still make it a long arc story. So it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you want to really understand the story in Jan Through Wilds, you got to play the last expansion, which is not very good. It's like, okay, that's a hard, that's not exactly a winning sell. That's kind of the bet that they made with the way that they executed last time. But
yeah,
I think even when they first announced this new yearly cadence, it was kind of like, well, you can't really judge the first one. You kind of have to see them iterate at least once to kind of get a feel for, is this going to work? And if it, despite everything, it feels like, you know what? I'm hopeful. They're in a good place. I think everyone, at least in the player base on the Reddit, which is hard to please, has been generally well pleased with how things have turned out so far, though the pacing is slower. So
okay.
had a good time, but I'm at a point now where I think I'm kind of like at a point where I'm ready to, luckily, you know, all the content remains viable. You don't have to log in every day to stay up to date. So I can kind of put it down and then get ready for, I've got circled on my calendar, Visions of Mana for within a few days of us recording this podcast, it'll be coming out. So I'll be ready to put that.
The new region, does it like introduce any cool new scenery or biomes that you haven't seen before in this game?
The thing is that the base game plus all of its other expansions have kind of covered the gamut. So there's nothing that's not really been touched, but it's kind of like a rainforest, but more like, I'm trying to think, it's a river delta that it rains a lot. It's like a temperate woodland, so it's not something super out there, but it is like, and in general, like if you go to an old map, it's one of those things where the progress is slow enough that if you've been playing the game for a while, you don't really notice. But if you go to it, like a map that came out in 2012, and then a map that came out now, just the density of all the, you know, environments and trees and foliage and rivers and objects in the world is just so much better laid out and less, way less flat. There's a lot of verticality. There's a lot of like cliffs where it's kind of like, it's not quite to the level of like Elden Ring. We're like, shit, I was on that bridge way up there an hour ago, and now I'm all the way down here. But it does have a little bit of that. And some of that's due to the fact that now there's flying mounts and things like that, that the base game didn't have and all that stuff.
And maybe for the next one, just like, okay, we've run out of regions. Let's go to the moon.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, that's the one game we had listed to talk about here. I guess while I'm speaking, I talked about it last week on the podcast, but I did write up my thoughts on the Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader. So I basically, if you've heard my diatribe on that last week, then you kind of know what's already written down. But I kind of put pen to paper or doc to CMS. I don't know. So that's up on the website now at rpgsite.net if you want to read that. Basically, I before I knew it, that review was like 3,500 words, but there was enough systems at play that even just describing at a very basic level how everything works and what I feel about it, I'm like, oh crap, this thing has gotten pretty long. So I like, it's pretty thorough. It's up on the website, so if you want to read that. I did score it the highest of all the Owlcat games I've played, which is all of them. So, and I think that is partially due to two things. One, I think I just enjoy the pure turn-based gameplay better than real time with pause. So I think that's a personal preference thing. And also, I think just the fact that I waited 9 months to play it has helped my impressions quite a lot. So it's the favorite game that I've played, but with those two kind of caveats put in. Mm-hmm. So that's up on the site as well. Yeah. And I guess since we talked about Black Myth Wukong, just to try to put a bow in that discussion, because we talked about our impressions of that last week. Of course, anyone who was following, it did like explode on Steam concurrent player numbers. It has sold over 10 million copies. What did the concurrent number max out to? I think the last I saw it was like 1.2 or 3
million.
It was like
2.7 or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And it was like second highest to only PUBG at its apex or something like that.
I believe so, yeah. And most of the users was like from China, so that definitely helped. As well,
yeah. I mean,
it's been exploding over there. Like, that, obviously, it's been just doing well overall and internationally, especially over there. Like the player base over there, really, really, really behind it.
Yeah, even my brother doesn't really care about video games. He hasn't like played much games in the last 10 years. He come back and asked me, he's like, "Hey, can I borrow your PlayStation to play that?"
I mean, it's cool. You know, it's cool to see like people discovering it together. I think it does well even like from if you're watching it like a streamer watch it or watching a streamer play through it or whatever, right? Because it's a game that has like, it's very easy to like miss secrets in, so you're kind of listening into like your interactive chat during streaming saying, hey, don't miss that secret over there, you know, like I know some streamers I've been kind of keeping an eye on. Some of them admit it's like, yeah, I don't know how I'd play this game without a chat telling me, you know, where the secrets are because they're so easy to miss. You know, it's like, yep, I know how that is. You know,
yeah, I mean, like,
I definitely didn't find everything. So
we've all been there before. Yeah. All the wikis are written and things like that. Like, I've already talked about this, but like replaying Elden Ring with the DLC compared to playing it pre-release originally, like Jesus, I missed so much shit, like all of it. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I think that's why I can never be a streamer. I would be like stuck on the most simplest puzzle for half an hour. It'll make me look like an idiot, so I'll better not expose myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's been great seeing people, you know, genuinely like it, enjoy it, and it is definitely, people do make a good point that like, hey, this is a video game, it's not a live service, they didn't sell any DLC or there's like some pre-order stuff in it, but it's just generally just like a complete package. It's like, you know, when people celebrated Baldur's Gate 3 last year, it's just like, hey, it's a normal video game release. There's no battle passes nor daily logins. It's just a regular-ass solid video game, you know? So I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'll take those where I can get it.
Because
it's kind of weird.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's just because like it went with Baldur's Gate 3 when Larian said we're not making like they did some post patch updates to like and they added a little bit of content with it, but it was mostly just polish. And then yeah. they said we're not making a expansion. Which is kind of it's sets the norm now that you're like for instance I have Dragon's Dogma 2 still installed because I'm like they're gonna announce expansion of this eventually, right? They have to, you know, they did it for the first game, that means they're legally obligated to do it for the second game, right? I forget if they I don't think they've actually said
it's all they have a regulation.
And so when Larian said no we're not doing it, I kind of appreciated that, though I think there is some to read about there. None of this is like ever been stated explicitly, but my personal impression, and I don't know anything, is that some relationships were strained between Larian and Wizards of the Coast, especially when Sven said, like, out of the people that were, like, there when the original licensing deal was made with Wizards and Larian, like, they're just not there anymore, like, upon announcement of the game and release of the game, like, no, like, very few people are still left, and, like, Jesus, what happened?
Yeah.
Really, the project was still successful despite that.
I've said this before, but it's funny to think how Baldur's Gate 3 was announced at a Google Stadia event.
Yeah.
Yep.
It feels like probably just a miracle project behind the scenes of like how everything came together, to be honest. For people who just know the full scope of that, it's like it was a miracle that this came together the way it did and performed the way it did.
Yeah, and didn't die in the
Yeah. I'm sure there was like a billion things in the process that could have just made it all fall apart. So miraculously did it. So yeah, I mean it's cool to see Game Science find a massive success with Black Myth Wukong, and you know hopefully we get like more like I don't know what they're gonna do, like if it's a direct sequel to Wukong, like a Wukong 2 or like a Black Myth like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, for example. I would be there day one, you know.
Black Myth, go on you.
Yeah, on my way. So, yeah, I mean, it's just very, very cool to see this game performing so fucking well and just getting, like, the reception that it's getting. It's cool. I'm happy when, you know, cool video games are doing well.
Yeah, it shows you that you don't have to make live service games all the time. And, you know, maybe use kind of as a market to, like, you know, sustain, like, very bloated budgets, like with AAAs coming, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why a lot of companies worldwide, not just gaming industry, like, you know, see China as such a that kind of like their one of their golden markets for them, because you know there's so many people there, there's so much obviously profit potential to be made if you're like how you need to have like if you're like a foreign video game, you have to get like approved to be sold in the China market.
Yeah, it takes like a year to get approved, so a lot of these games have to be like planned way ahead.
Yeah, it's like a difficult process, but they have some
very specific considerations. Maybe Chow, you can speak to this because I don't want to speak to something I'm not an authority on. But I think like the way you depict skeletons in the Chinese market has to be done in a very specific way. Like there's things that like we don't even think about.
There's lots of things. I think the Chinese government like kind of put a lot of strict laws over the years. Mm-hmm. I think what happens is like, even like it comes to like TV dramas, like back then they can make a lot of these like war epics talking about these times, but nowadays they can't seem to like, you know, depict certain like themes and stuff. So they're a little bit overboard in censorship and stuff, which is not a good thing, you know.
Yeah. And not even like conventional censorship, but stuff that we don't even think about. Like, oh, I didn't even realize that was in consideration for something that has to be like looked at before we can release this.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's like culture differences in the way things are managed. Mm-hmm. But either way, like that's why I was always behind like, you know, the China Hero Project that Sony's initiative doing, like basically helping, you know, Chinese developers kind of help develop their game and release it to market. You know, they expanded that to, I believe, an other territory recently. It's like called the MENA Project. I think that's Middle East.
Middle East, North Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like, also an India just, Hero Project, too.
Right. Like, to me, I'm just like, that's, you know, Sony has a lot of, like, bad things wrong with it, don't get me wrong, but I'm willing to give them like, you know, hey, that's a really, really big like win on the on those initiatives of like helping to support game developers internationally in like more like smaller niche markets that you don't think of as like, you know, as like the primary players in the game developing. You know, so like, hey, good on them for that.
with that, half an hour in, we're going to go straight into news. And we have, I promised, 3.5 hours of news. I don't know. I don't know how long this will take. I have no idea.
And 3 hours.
And yeah, and this isn't going to be chronological because a lot of these games, like I said, kind of showed up in multiple different avenues. So we're going to try to kind of centralize all talk. That way we're not hopscotching too much. And then also the order that I put these in are mostly arbitrary. So just because we talk about something first or second, no judgment made. We just have to talk. We just have to pick an order. So I picked one. And the first thing we're going to talk about is the newest trailer for, of course, one of the biggest things that we're anticipating next year. And that is Monster Hunter Wilds. So, of course, this was announced a while ago. We had the initial trailer. Over the last couple weeks, we've been having like the little short gameplay overview trailers, one for each weapon, a couple about basic mechanics, focus mode. We kind of talked about that. This one is a trailer that's basically focusing on two new monsters. And, well, I say new. I should divert expertise to those who have been playing the series longer.
You're right. You're right.
Are they both Lalabrina and Ray Dao are both brand new monsters?
Yes.
Okay, I that's what I thought, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, no, actually, this is on the online game that released in the early 2000s or something like that. So yeah, the area is called the Scarlet Forest. It opens up with some gameplay introducing Lalabrina, which is like a floral themed giant spider. Like its like abdomen is like a giant rose petal. And then it goes in the second half of the trailer with an electric dragon called Ray Dao. There introduces a few new characters that I saw a lot of stupid kind of reception on social media. If you know, you know. But I think everything here looks really neat. They do the thing that I always talk about, that there's no UI that I like to see, but that's fine. But
I mean, we got a lot of like gameplay footage with UI anyway, like for the
games. Yeah, and with the weapons trailers and things like that. So it's not like we don't know what that looks like.
Oh yeah, but everything but also here, I think, is people like at the show floor recording footage as well.
Yeah, true. Good point.
So I mean, it's once again a really fucking solid trailer, and I think the some of the biggest announcements made for Monster Hunter Wilds weren't even like in this trailer. Like, it was cool seeing the new creatures and the new and what the forest biome will look like in this game, because a lot of the footage up until this point was just like the deserts area, kind of like the starting area, I imagine, in that game, and that's fine. But you know, but the desert area can be kind of bland and dull for some people. That's it's cool to see. It's like, oh, okay, there's what the forest looks like. But like there was also developer streams, like separate live streams happening throughout the week at Gamescom, and like one of the biggest reveals that they said is like, hey, armor is no longer gender locked. If you're a male or female, you can wear whatever armor design you want. You're not confined to one or the other, which is honestly like kind of a big step up for the series, because like I know a lot of people, it's like who's like, okay, I like making a female character, but I don't like the female armor designs. I like the big armor, like heavily covered armor designs that look cool on like the males, for example. But I wish I had that option for the females, or vice versa, you know. So people can just mix and match, go whatever they want now on whatever armor designs they want, which is really, really cool. There was also just like a lot of people just like putting out like a ton of like info in terms of like what they noticed with the Gamescom demo, and like getting a first hands-on feel on it. I know there was like some instances of like, since it's an early build and the first time they're showing like the PlayStation 5 version, I believe there's like some performance issues on the floor, but once again, early in-game development build on the console. And it just, you know, a lot of people are just kind of blowing away like the ambition of this project. And one of the funniest things they mentioned on stream is like, there's underwater exploration and navigation, but I believe the director or producer explicitly said, but there's no underwater combat. So there'll be underwater sections, but no combat underwater, which is funny. Because, you know, the underwater combat is a very loved or hated thing in the Monster Hunter community from prior entries that had.
I'm hoping the fact that they've, like, gotten, like, because you actually can control yourself underwater. So there is, like, some movement and some abilities, like, you can, like, gather stuff. I'm hoping the fact that they've already done that much work for underwater means that you might get, we might see underwater combat in the eventual expansion.
Yeah, I was going to be that. It'd be interesting to see how they'll do it if they do it. Like, because you know, it's a once again that's a make it or break it for some people. So if they decide to do it, and they'll have to do something really exciting with it for to get that crowd. JMC, yeah, Valid,
yeah, like, all I'm thinking is
you've been following news on this week. Well, what have you seen?
It's been really fascinating just seeing how much they were willing to like show off to people like so early already. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure like when it was announced, but I did have someone tell me that they confirmed that the way that crossplay works is that it's through the guild card system.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot more sense, which means that even if you match made with someone, as long as you exchange guild cards, you should be able to just invite each other to parties that way. So that thing that I said that might be an issue, no worries. Crossplay should be just fine with like inviting people to parties and whatnot. So besides that, I mean, the trailer was really good. We already talked about that. I've been really impressed with how good the new monster designs are so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ray Dua, like it already looked pretty neat before, but like getting a better look at it, it's like this is a wyvern where its head turns into a railgun and shoots a fucking railgun at you.
Pretty awesome.
That's really neat. Yeah,
that's also really crazy to see that. I guess it wasn't really showing off that much about the cadence of this game, early on, like an SGF, for example. But like, you don't have to like go back to some sort of village or camp right away after a hunt is completed. You can just like immediately go to the next one if you want, like kind of like the guiding land.
That's what they showed. That's what they showed at Summer Game Fest. And one thing that they also showed that people have been kind of cluing into is that the way that cooking works this time is way more freeform. In the sense that you can like find ingredients or buy specific ingredients and then combine them out in the field. Like, I'm not sure if anyone's shown anything from it, but there's like a cheesemonger in that one main village in the desert. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. And they have like various types of cheeses you can buy that can be added into a meal when you cook them. And I'm not making this up. Like, I mean, Adam was in the room too when we saw the presentation at Summer Game Fest, and that was one thing they deliberately pointed out.
That's funny.
So
it's also funny that like there's a second cooking mini game. So aside from like the quality of the meat, of like, you know, you're kind of waiting for like, the proper time to get it off the roast. There's also like a second one where like how many cuts you make, and that'll determine how much food you get back from it. I'm like, whoa, that's weird, you know. Like, that's interesting. They also have, like an optimized potion system where, like, the game will decide what kind of potion will you can use to heal with. So you're not, quote-unquote, wasting any, like, potential healing, which is kind of weird. I'm like, I wonder how the priority system is for that. If people could figure that out, because that's interesting. And also, just in general, like, it was funny seeing, like, you know, the live gameplay demos of like some people who recorded footage of them getting carted back into like a pop-up camp, but then like immediately when you go back to that pop-up camp, there's like a monster right there ready to like fuck up that camp. It's like, oh, hi. Hello. The location of these like camps that like you can build on, there's like safety ratings too, like, you know, like of how likely it'll get attacked by a monster. So like you're sacrificing between like less travel time, being closer to the monster versus like the safety of like where that camp is. Kind of an interesting risk versus reward type deal as well. It's just and the map is like crazy because like full 3D as well. So it's just all the footage you've shown out. It's like wow, this is insane. I'm gonna be playing this for a long time. It looks like.
The second set of trailers that I have listed here are both from the upcoming Crimson Desert. So we've talked about Crimson Desert a few times, and we kind of joked, I think. I think it was a joke that we said it always shows up around Gamescom time or opening light time, because that's when we seem to get our yearly check-in about this game. The game that was originally launched as an MMO, then they seem to really shrink away from that language. It's just an action game now, as far as we can tell. The first trailer that we have is a gameplay trailer that starts out with the protagonist against some bandits and then fights like a giant Yeti thing called a White Horn. And then we have a second set of trailers, each one of them focusing on a different boss battle. These are almost entirely gameplay, including UI and combat. So I looked at this and I was watching actually while you guys were discussing Monster Hunter with the pop-up tents and the cooking supplies. Like, okay, I got to watch this Crimson Desert trailer so I can speak to something about it. But I'm like, yeah, that looks like an action RPG. This white horn sure has a lot of health.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty solid showing because, you wouldn't know this if you didn't play Black Desert, but, you know, but one of my friends, has spent a lot of time in Black Desert. Like, yeah, it is kind of like the warrior class in Black Desert. They use a lot of animations and moves from that. But that's not necessarily a bad thing because the combat system in Black Desert Online is pretty solid. So you kind of get good visual feedback in these trailers, like when you're hitting something, like just the impact of moves. You have fun moves like suplexing some dudes, doing some command grabs in the middle of combat. And just like, you know, the visual scenery for some of them is like really, really astounding. So like I'm interested in definitely checking it out, and it's cool to see the combat system looks pretty interesting, at least from visual feedback and cadence perspective, where you feel kind of the tension of combat with multi-phased bosses for some of them. It's like, oh shit, you're still not dead, and you're going to the next phase of this. So like when I saw these bosses, I'm like, oh, that's really cool that finally they're showing actual real gameplay with some UI. There's like a
temperature meter. Actually pulling up the radio for some reason. Wheel and things like that.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a solid showing. I would like to see a release date or window or some sort of demo.
I would like to see is just a little bit more of what happens between combat encounters. Mm-hmm. I remember I was watching a stream of Black Desert probably 5 or 6 years ago, and this is one of the only times I've watched gameplay Black Desert. So if you're a Black Desert lifer or pro or veteran, I might be representing this pretty poorly, but someone was loading up supplies on a wagon and then carting it from one town to another because they weren't a combat focused character. They were trying to do some trading or some sort of economy based thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that Crimson Desert should have that, but I'm just makes me curious. I wonder how this game is just structured, not short-term progression, immediate boss fights, enemies in front of you, but between missions, or is it an open world map? I'm not sure. I think they've described it as such, but I don't know if we've seen that.
They've shown a previous trailer. It seems to be an expansive open world, but I don't exactly know if that's the case. Mm-hmm. And but they showed that trailer that we kind of made fun of. It's everything the game. This game has fishing, this game has horseback riding, this game has air balloons, has gliding. It's like what the fuck do you do? I don't know, you can do everything in this game, apparently. I agree with you. I would like to see definitely more of that aspect too. You definitely made the case for your combat, hey, it looks cool. There's gonna be different classes that I'm interested to see more of how you can customize, your chosen class. But definitely this can't be just be everything the game, obviously. So what's the actual structure, you're saying, this game?
The queen, the queen Stoneback crab boss battle is pretty cool because it has kind of some of these. It's the point of comparison I have to make, this almost Shadow of the Colossus style, mounting on its back and crawling around and stabbing weak points. That's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say, Castlevania Lords of Shadow style, because they aped it as well.
When I think of Crimson Desert, when I think of Crimson Desert, you know what I also think of?
What?
Where's Dokkaebi?
I was trying to remember the name of this game the other day. I had to
It's been 3 years. They were announced at Gamescom with a weird catchy music video, and then nothing since.
Yeah, they looked into it. The Twitter account hasn't been since the end of 2022 or something.
I actually just realized that the gameplay video that they showed at Gamescom 2021, the trailer, they re-uploaded it in November 2023. I guess something changed, but
I don't know.
Anyways, the reason why I think of that is because both those games are Pearl Abyss, and they were sort of soft announced at the same time, all the way back in 2019. Anyways, don't know where
that is. I wonder if it's just hey, let's get Crimson Desert out the door first, then let's focus on Dokkaebi, maybe.
Yeah.
Is this the same company that published Terra? Out of curiosity's sake.
I only know them for Black Desert. I don't know if they've done anything else.
I don't know why I keep hearing rumors about companies trying to bring back Terra from the dead. I don't know where that even started.
I have no idea.
The next trailer that we got over the course of the week was the newest trailer for Anatria, The Last Song. This is the Souls-like based off of Italian like folklore that was originally supposed to release earlier in the year, but then moved the release date back because it was like overlapping perfectly with Shadow of the Erdtree from JAMA Games. So we got a new gameplay trailer, and yeah, the game, there was a little bit of confusion here earlier in the year, but it will be releasing, as far as I can tell, at the same time for PC, PlayStation, and Xbox, which is good for because of what was the context here again? Like Xbox players,
there was like some apology letter from like the director or producer about like delayed the Xbox. That apparently they weren't delayed the Xbox, so it's like okay, that's weird.
It's almost beside the point now because it's releasing on everything on September 19th. We got a new trailer for it. The trailer. One second, my YouTube is going very slow. It doesn't show UI, I don't think. So,
I mean, but people already have a good idea, like because they released a 6 hour a trailer on Steam earlier in the year, like that lasted for like 6 hours or so. So people who are interested in it probably got a good like solid idea of like whether it's for them or not. Like for people who like Souls likes, you know, they seem to enjoy it. They're like, hey, this gave us some good ideas. But they're interested in the full release. Like that's basically kind of the goal of the demo, right? It's like, hey, figure out if it's for you, and if like you're interested in it, you're definitely more interested in now because you got like a solid look at it, like multiple hours to tinker with. So
looking at the trailer right now, the one thing that I see that stands out to me is that there's a lot of camera shake or like focus point alteration. I don't know what you call that, like the dolly zoom sort of thing, like whenever weapons are like swung or impact. Hopefully there's some knobs on that for accessibility, sure. but other than that, like everything looks fluid and fun, and you know the environments are pretty unique, and the armor sets are kind of like different because it's based off like folklore and mythos that I'm not well versed in. So it's kind of cool just to have that kind of flavor to it. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, my last name is Italian, but that's the only credit I could take. I don't know anything about any of this.
Yeah, I like the whole gimmick is like, yeah, you'll have different masks that have like different innate abilities that like you can swap off of, and then like, I guess you can like also like switch like builds out of the like. During the game as well, like in the middle of like exploration, I think. So I don't know. I mean, like, hopefully it's like it does well. It has cool enough systems. It's like, I'm not saying like Black Myth Wukong is like 100% of Souls like because you know people have been debating whether it's a Souls like or not throughout this week as well. Which it's kind of a stupid thing to kind of get hung up on. But this formula of action game is still proven to be very successful, as Wukong has shown.
Yeah, I did see someone say on a Reddit comment or Twitter post, like, oh, are we just calling all action games Souls-like? And, like, I always see it more as a heuristic. Like, I'm just trying to, like, whenever we say Metroidvania or Souls-like or even, like, JRPG, just trying to, like, set the table, which then we go into detail and try to describe the game more. It's not an algorithm. It's a heuristic.
Yeah, it's not like not like a yes or no extreme either. It can borrow components.
just to help describe the game rather than from the ground up going line by line and saying okay, anyways, that's maybe beside the point. But yeah, we got a new trailer for that coming out in less than a month, September 19th. Here's a game that showed up, I believe, during the opening night live, and then later got a later gameplay demo published directly from Warhorse. This is for Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. We learned last week or the week before that it was going to be released on February 11th, 2025. During Opening Night Live, we had a gameplay teaser. So it was kind of like a cinematic trailer, but it showed plenty of like vertical gameplay snippets. And then Warhorse released basically a 25-minute vertical slice gameplay showcase, of which those snippets came from. Of course, if you're not aware, Kingdom Come Deliverance, the first game and the second game, are entirely in first person, including first person melee combat. You see a lot of horseback riding. A lot of the cutscenes for the story, though, are still in third person, so you still get to see handsome Henry in all his glory and all that stuff. But yeah, it looks really immersive. It looks like the sort of thing that's hard to like sell the progression of it because the pacing is deliberate. It seems like watching the gameplay trailer for 2, just him like sneaking around, whistling to try to get guards' attention, going in and out of buildings, conversing with people. It makes me like, you know, I really want to play the first one so I can play this one.
Yeah, that's definitely what I want to do too. Just replay it again. Because like the game's so good at that. Like you, like even if you played the first one and like go and like watch the trailer for 2, it's like the 20-minute breakdown, it's like, man, they really nailed it again of like just selling you like being immersed in medieval Europe and just like kind of living the life of this kind of, you know, I'm not going to say dumb-looking dude, but he used to be innocent and now he's grown up. It was funny. There's like a pre-order like discount code, and like the discount code was Henry and all.
Yeah, I laughed at that too.
Yeah.
10% off GMD with code Henry.
Henry. So yeah, I mean they're making the game that, you know, that captivated their audiences in the first one. They're not backing down from that. They're not making any concessions of like, hey, we should try to like go for like a broader market for like a new audience, or like, hey, we're really making this game for the fans that fell in love with the first one. You know, you could still go into this game without knowing the first one, but you know, but they're definitely, it seems like they're not compromising on it at all. Of that, there's gonna be a bigger, better version of that experience that you loved in the first.
Let's see. So we have another trailer for the upcoming game from Akatsuki Games, Tribe Nine. This is the free-to-play game coming out for Steam and mobile at the moment. It was announced earlier this summer. Was it? No, I was going to say, was that a Nintendo Direct? No, that was a different game with the same artist. Because obviously this
that Tribe was, Nine is not going to the Switch. 100 Line Academy something.
That's yeah. Right. So I got those two games confused because they, from same just artist. An art perspective, they look kind of similar. Yeah. So Tribe Nine is not coming to the Switch. It is a free-to-play game coming to Steam and mobile. We got a new character called the Re, as in like Kingdom Hearts Recoded. The Re game trailer for Tribe Nine. So that's a pretty fun trailer. It shows a lot of segments that are a lot of like 16-bit like Super Nintendo art plus like the action gameplay. Like I actually didn't like know what I was looking at when I saw like the 16-bit art.
It's actually like when you're navigating around the world pretty much. When you're in combat, it's not at full 3D models, but when you're navigating around in between combat segments, you'll come to that pixel art style. It's basically
it. And this, we talked about this when it was first announced. I guess this Tribe Nine, there was an anime a couple years ago, and then this story is obviously coming out 2 years after the anime. Or I guess we don't know specifically when it's coming out, but after the anime. We don't know if it's like the narrative is related specifically, but like that's, I don't know if that's who they're trying to court, is people who saw that anime and wanted a game based off of it, like Fairy Tale or something else. But
I don't know. All I remember about the anime was like there was a lot of like extreme deadly baseball, and I was like, when I look at this game, I'm like, man, there's really a lack of extreme deadly baseball in this game. Maybe there's like some characters baseball theme, but it definitely doesn't look like
It looks more it looks more just like generic cyberpunky, not in a bad way, but not specifically baseball. Random tangent. I did also finish me and my girlfriend finished watching Kaiju number 8 this last week.
Oh, okay. How'd you like it?
Pretty fun. Though I went to the Reddit and they've announced season 2. People are like, I hope season 2 like improves on the manga, because I guess the manga at that point goes like to snail's pace.
I have no idea, but I enjoyed the anime adaptation of Kaiju.
Yeah, it was
well. I never read it before. Okay. It's pretty fun. I think they're making a game of that as well. I don't know if it's like a console or mobile game, but I remember that they announced a game for it.
So we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but we got even more pre-release gameplay footage for the first Berserker Kazan. I don't know if he knew this earlier or not. Was this announced this week that it's being voiced by Ben Starr, the protagonist?
I have no idea if that's new.
It's new to me. I don't remember.
I think it's new confirmation
in general.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I like he tweeted like I am Kazan or whatever. Like, oh yeah, no. It feels kind of silly because like I didn't expect it, but like I'm immediately like more interested. I don't know. It's a
I had like zero interest in the game until I heard it. It's like, wait, that's Clive.
like sure, I'll play this just to hear.
So Sean's like, this is FF16 too.
Yeah, the better FF16. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of voice actors. I'm being silly here, but a lot of voice actors were like, "I can finally announce that I'm so glad to be a part of, you know, such a publisher's new game." Blah blah blah. I'm so excited to voice this character. And then meanwhile, Ben Starr is like, "I am Kazan."
We had a reveal trailer saying, they call it a reveal trailer, saying that it's going to release early next year for PC, PlayStation and Xbox. There will be a closed beta test on consoles in October, October 11th through 20th. So a limited time demo, effectively.
I signed up for it. I don't know if I can get chosen by signing.
And then they have a that's like a 2-minute trailer. Then they also released a deep dive, a slightly longer trailer where it has voiceover from the creative director. Voiceover from the producer about the game. And then in addition to that, RPG site, we were able to submit some questions with the creative director, Jun-Ho Lee, that we also have linked in that article. So we had a little bit of a Q&A. I forget if Adam or Josh took lead on these on this Q&A with because Josh is on.
Yeah, I asked some questions. The answers came kind of late, and Adam and I were like, what are we going to do with these? And then I was like, just put it on this. I'm like, that's a good idea. Because I don't know where else you've really done it. So, but I think the bigger, cooler thing that they finally showed here is like, hey, they finally show you the UI. What does the actual, like, what does any of the actions mean in this game in terms of, like, gameplay mechanics and, like, what the player sees themselves? You know, they make a big focus on, like, draining enemy stamina to get, like, your big DPS window in, and that can happen to you. If you drain your stamina, you'll get a lot of damage. You see damage numbers, you see stat, like, you know, stamina meters for both you and your opponents, and that general, like, you know, just action RPG, like, relentless, like, try to encourage, like, aggression from the player, pretty much, and managing their stamina. And, you know, and it seems like, at least from the response to the YouTube videos, a lot of people are very positive in what they see so far on the game, because, hey, the game's, like, not really showing, like, story cinematics, they're showing, like, pure gameplay. And that's what people want to see. It's like, hey, what am I actually going to see when I'm, like, playing the game? You know? So it's nice to see, like, hey, the marketing is really focused on, like, the gameplay. Yeah. And not so much of, like, here's the story set up, and here's, you
or,
know.
Or, for me, like, I don't know why, this seems like something that, maybe I'm just hung up on something I don't need to be, but even if the UI is pretty simple and kind of like, you can kind of guess what it would look like, why are you so hung up on that? Just remind you, like, we're not trying to make this look as cinematic as possible. This is just what the game looks like when you're playing the game. Like, that's all it is. Like, we're not trying to, like, pull the camera out to a way that you wouldn't ever actually play it, or even a way that you might not even be allowed to position it in game, or make it look as, like, movie trailer as possible. Like, nope, this is a video game. Surprise. Like, this is what it looks like when you play our game.
Well, so it's good to see that finally, like, showed off, like, you know, gameplay with UI. That's like, I'm always very suspicious of, like, I don't know where my breaking point was earlier on, but I'm like, I'm always suspicious of a game that, like, shows gameplay without UI, and, like, they make it and they keep doing this for an extended amount of time that they won't show UI. You know, I'm like, show what the player will see.
my other pet peeve, which luckily this Kazan trailer is not doing, it does this pretty well. I actually thought about it most recently with the not a game we're covering, but the Indiana Jones game that's coming out in December and next year for PlayStation. So I played, like, that's coming out from Machine Games, it's Wolfenstein developers, etc. Old developers from, like, the Chronicles of Riddick games. But a lot of the gameplay for that trailer, like, the snippets that they show are, like, 2 seconds long or less. Like, it's a lot of, like, really, like, montage. And to me, it's just, like, are you afraid that we're going to get bored if your gameplay little segments are longer than 2 seconds? Like, here it's actually, like, here is a boss fight that they do a few visual cuts. That's fine. But they say, like, no, here's 15 seconds of Kazan dodging attacks and then countering. Like, oh, okay, that's something you might do in this game. Like, sort of thing. Like,
is this a Souls-like, Brian?
The heavy focus... I'm not arbiter of this, but the heavy focus, the heavy focus on stamina makes me feel like it's Souls-like. But again, that's just a heuristic, just to make you, just to kind of, like, looking at the trailer in front of you, what it might look like in your mind's eye. But yeah, I think it looks really fun. Mm-hmm. Now, something about what they've shown, I remember the last time we brought this up, I was like, oh, it's another Souls-like. But you know what? This one looks neat. Let's see. We also got a new trailer for Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred. This is the expansion coming out in October on the 8th. The main point of this trailer here was to reveal and discuss the new mercenaries system. Basically, in the new region of the game added with Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred, you'll be able to recruit basically 4 NPCs that can help you. I believe you select one. It's not a full party. It's you and an ally. As far as I can tell, these NPCs have unique kind of traits and builds bespoke to them. It's not like they're another player that you brought with you, which you can obviously already do. But they're kind of got unique talents. Like one's almost like, I don't know if they call him a tiefling in this universe, but that's what he looks like a demon humanoid. Mm-hmm. And there's like a shield bearer. There's an archer. They all have names and like titles. And if you go to the publisher's webpage, the Blizzard's webpage, they kind of show you snippets of what their skill trees look like. So they kind of have a little unique skill tree that forks in a few ways. Nothing too overly ornate, but you have a little bit of customization about who do you want to recruit, who do you want to bring with you, who complements your build style the most, and how do you want to build them very specifically. So seems like a fun addition, like nothing too groundbreaking, but
I mean, it was kind of like a base feature of Diablo 3, but you know, it's not bad. You know,
there you go.
And it's also really weird too, because like some of them are like the shield bearer, for example. It's like, oh, so you could have added like a paladin class and didn't, and we don't want paladin. And, you know, a lot of the Diablo players want, you know, legacy classes back. You know, and it's kind of for them, it's like kind of just like being teased that it's like, hey, we won't add paladin back, but you can have an NPC paladin with you. It's like, thanks Blizzard, appreciate it.
And most of the trailer was kind of like, Blizzard, for better or worse, has some of the best CG artists in the industry, in my opinion. And a lot of the trailer is like, yep, we see that. But then the back half of the trailer is finally some gameplay showing the what the mercenaries actually look like in combat. So still coming out on October 8th. You can choose mercenaries now. Seems pretty fun. I'll probably blitz through it. Like, I played through the base game, but it was very like critical path only. Like, I didn't really stop to smell the roses or anything. I just went to story marker, but I'll probably play this in at least the same way. I will probably, just because I like the theme, the flavor of it, I'll probably grab the tiefling. I forget what their name is, but the one that's like a demon flame dude.
You put up the document, Aldekin, the cursed child.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the...
We got a trailer that I wasn't sure we were expecting. I forget if this was announced prior, but we got a Starfield trailer. We knew that Shattered Space was dated at some point for later in the year. We did get a release date for Shattered Space. That is September 30th. The thing that I wasn't expecting is that they also had a trailer showing that in Starfield, you now have the Mako from Mass Effect. Well, now they call it the Rev-8. So you have a vehicle, land vehicle, that you can use to explore planet surfaces in Starfield.
Is this DLC locked or not? I have no idea.
Part of a free update.
Okay.
They had a free update. I took a quick look at the patch notes. Yeah, the Rev-8, it's like an ATV vehicle, is available now. They also, in the patch notes, talked about some under the hood stuff, some technical, like you can like pick a frame rate limit now, either 30, 60 or unlimited. I'm like, you couldn't do that before, huh? I'm surprised. They obviously bug fixes, that sort of thing. A pretty major patch. The only thing that kind of surprises me is that like a lot of the times in Starfield, another game that I kind of like mostly critical path with only a few other diversions is, and this was kind of talked to death when the game was in its, you know, launching, is that as you land on the planets, you kind of land at nodes on the planet around the settlements and the cities. Like you can't, There are areas around each that you can't explore, but it's not like you can circumnavigate the planets. Like there's little regions that you can explore. So I wonder if they're going to like try to give you, because in the Shattered Space little tease that they gave at the very end of this trailer, they show the Rev-8, the Mako, in that. So I don't know if they're going to design those areas to be just slightly larger to account for the fact that you have that. Like to me, I'm just like, when I was playing Starfield, it's not like the thing at the front of my head was, you know what I wish I had? A land vehicle that could travel these vast areas, because that wasn't really like a concern. It was like, oh, you just land where the story is and you go there. So maybe it's fun. I have not played it myself, so I can't speak to firsthand experience, but obviously I do plan on playing Shattered Space, and we'll see how I feel about the Rev-8 as it pertains to that expansion. But a fun little shadow drop nonetheless from Gamescom. We did get a new, very long kind of gameplay, not really a trailer, it's 30 minutes, so like a gameplay look-in for the upcoming Dune Awakening Survival MMO. And they're actually using the term MMO, which is a rare term these days. And it's gameplay with voiceover by one of the developers, but let's see, creative director Joel Bylos. They talk about the how this is a game that is, the way that they set up the framework of this game, it's the Dune universe. If Paul Atreides never existed, so it's an alternate universe MMO, which I don't know enough about Dune. I've only seen the first movie to know whether that's a smart idea or not, but I would assume so. That way there's no like weird canon questions about things making sense or not. If they just say it's an alternate universe, that doesn't even pertain. But they show character creation, they show combat, they show some cinematics, they show some just multiplayer gameplay with Joel and one other character. It seems fun, but also it seems kind of early. Like, it seems like very kind of work in progress, WIP. So I'm not sure if the UI is finalized. And one of the very first things they say in this demo is, hey, this is early. There will be bugs. There will be glitches. This is a work in progress. So obviously you don't want to judge it too much on that. But it seems fun. It seems fully featured. I just don't know that I personally have a strong enough affinity for the Dune IP to be really more invested in it in that, other than there's not a lot of new MMOs these days that are strictly MMOs. So the fact that they're still trying to make this work is kind of fun.
Yeah, I guess the question is, like, well, Dune is hot right now because of the excellent films, but mm-hmm. whenever this comes out, will people still have the appetite for Dune? You know, it's kind of weird. Yeah,
that's the thing. It's so tied to one single IP that if an MMO, in order, like, MMOs, it feels like by their nature have to have staying power of, in these days, a decade or more. Are we going to still care about Dune in 2039?
It's not to say that, like, Dune is only the Dune appetite is only confined to the films, but, you know, but most people are exposed to Dune through the films and not necessarily the books themselves. So that we'll see. I don't know. That's kind of they've kind of put themselves in a weird position. You know, when you think about, like, games like, you know, Concord recently released this week, and it's like, oh, people don't really have an appetite for Overwatch clones at the moment.
I'm not sure if it's so much that. I think with Concord, I mean, Marvel Rivals is coming out soon. It's had a lot of interest. I think it's just as simple as Concord as a hero shooter. The character designs just didn't appeal to anyone. That's a death knell.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see. I don't know.
And then I actually didn't realize that the developer behind this Dune MMO also made Conan Exiles. Which makes sense, because the Conan Exiles, I've never played, but I've always heard it as, like, a pure survival game. Yeah. Or this they're calling a survival MMO. So kind of hitting a different flavor than, like, the theme parky MMOs that are more popular these days, it feels like.
This is still the weirdest, like, preview event thing I've ever done, because they had this, like, earlier this year, they had this YouTube, like, I guess, update that they put live, and they briefed people on it early and were like, hey, come to the Warner Brothers like lot, see the new Dune movie and also see this YouTube video, like, early. And it's like, okay, that was really weird.
I'm sure that was, like, super weird, but I'm sure the Adam will agree, like, probably the weirdest preview thing is that New World Internum thing that he got invited to.
Yeah, that was SGN. Then basically for New World Aeternum, they refused to call it an MMO, they refused to call it a console version, they refused to call it, like, a revamp. It's very strange.
They refused to, like, admit that New World released a few years ago, like, and this is not a new game, but it's weird. And it's like, whatever, we kind of talked about that when that was announced.
I'm sorry, but
is the Steam page for this still mostly negative? Let's see. Because basically people reacted to the announcement very poorly.
Remember looking at the time. I'm not in the New World player space, but I remember going to the Reddit at the time, and they're like, wait, we waited for this? Like, because they were kind of, like, waiting for a big major update, like, here's going to be a big content drop, expansion deal, something. And, like, oh, it's a console port thing, which is fine, get more players. That's always good for the health of a game, but the way they're going about it is just very, very strange. But hey, it'll be represented in that new, like, Amazon Secret Level show, like, anthology.
Oh yeah, that and Concord are getting, like, I guess episodes on that.
Oh yeah, so that was just announced. I guess we can talk about that. It's not in our wheelhouse, but yeah, Amazon Studios, the people behind, like, Rings of Power, they're making a new show called Secret Level. It's basically an anthology show of multiple games. You could say, like, none of these would carry a show on their own. But the selection is very eclectic and strange. Like,
I take offense to that, because one of them is Armored Core. There could definitely be an Armored Core show on its own. That'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah, for sure. but it's Amazon's publishing, so, like, New World is one of the ones in there. But then they have, like, Mega Man. They just say, like, Sony, and they show, like,
God of War, I believe, is one of them.
They show God of War. I think they show a few other Sony IPs. I don't play a lot of Sony games, yeah. So I'm not sure. Here, let me pull this up. Secret Level, which is,
I remember, like, the Mega Man teaser, like, silhouette thing looked kind of cursed because it was almost like a human-sized Mega Man, portioned Mega Man. And people were like, ugh.
Oh, yeah, Warhammer 40K, Spelunky, right? Of all things.
Spelunky, okay, that's...
Yeah.
Odd.
Oh, Sifu.
I'm not opposed to it. That's cool. Sifu's cool.
Dungeons and Dragons, just generals and IP, of course. There's a lot you can pull from there.
Oh, yeah.
The Outer, the Outer Worlds, pretty good. Which is very specific. I wonder how the Outer Worlds IP works, because the first game was Private Division. The second game is Microsoft. I don't know who owns that. But anyways, they got that in there. They've got Crossfire, which I think was like the weird Mass Effect. That's Exodus. Exodus is the one that's like a weird Mass Effect like that was. I shouldn't say weird. The game they showed, that was debuted at the Video Game Awards 2023.
Crossfire is like that free to play FPS, right? That's like huge in like Asia, I believe. I think that was the name of it. I don't remember. I think the concept
is an online
tactical
first-person shooter that launched a while ago.
So I think like Secret Level, like the concept itself is like really cool as an anthology of things. It's like some of the selections of games, and just like it's like purely bought out. It's not massive. Like featuring Concord, there is like spunny, I guess is the term I use. But the staff behind it has like a proven track record.
And like Honor of Kings, I'd never heard of, but I guess it's a MOBA that's been in. Yeah. It was released in Korea in 2015, and then got a worldwide release just this summer. So it's contemporary in that way. But I just
even though it's like not going to be huge internationally, like say in Japan or in the West, like, but I know Honor of Kings like is super super fucking massive in Korea as like as a competitive sport. That's. And like it always tops the charts there. It's like, what is going on? So I can understand there's like the impact of it there for sure.
I will say though that Secret Level just seems like a really uninspired name. It seems like a boardroom name, like some guy who's never played video games in his life. Don't those things have like Secret Level? You unlock a levels in video games, right? We should name our show about video games after that. Like it just seems like, oh, I know that has no bearing on the quality of the show, but it just seems uninspired as a title.
Go for it. Did you see that Amazon, one of their COOs, something Hartman is his name, he had an interview with IGN and basically said game companies should use AI because we really don't have acting.
What?
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Or Christoph Hartman is his name. And I was actually trying to...
That's a guy who knows his video games.
I was trying to read his, like... response to like make sure I wasn't taken out of context, but it actually almost got worse because it's immediately after he talks about acting, he talks about localization, like the other thing that probably shouldn't have AI touch. Come on,
yeah, that's
I could read his response, but it's on IGN and he literally says, right now, we're localizing our game into a certain set of languages. Does it commercially make sense to have it in a language? Yes or no? Having AI will help us. Like,
what? Okay, well, that blows. That's not a great response. That's not.
What it's just going to make us translate our game into more languages, which is great for gamers. It's like, what?
Well, whatever suits him, I guess.
Yeah, because AI has never messed up language. Like, I don't know.
Anyways. We were talking about Amazon.
We were talking about Amazon. Dune Awakening.
We're talking about Adam going to get access to Secret Level early, and he's definitely going to share his account with me so I can watch the Armored Core episode.
I don't know. When I heard the word Secret Level, I was thinking like Secret Wars from Marvel or something.
Let's see. We also have... this is actually not really tied to Gamescom, it's tied to a release date. We have another Square Enix trailer, a final trailer for Visions of Mana. I have not watched this because Square Enix is notorious for final trailers.
I did not watch it.
I watched this trailer. I don't think it's as
bad. Right, okay, I'll tell you what's in the trailer.
No, I won't.
It's everything.
I mean, it shows some scenes that are like around the mana tree. Like, okay, this is probably near the end of the game. I don't think the scenes themselves are like surprising or show anything that is shocking. But it's like these are probably late game cutscenes.
No, so. Square Enix, they probably gotta show you the guy that cuts the tree like every mana game.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either.
It's more just like a general trailer. Like, here's some combat, here's some exploration, showing some of the places. But then there are some cutscenes, like trying to ramp up the drama. Like,
I still remember that 7 Rebirth Final trailer. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I just don't watch Square Enix Final trailers ever since the Neo The World Ends With You one, which was a month before launch on the Nintendo YouTube channel. And it literally spoils the final fucking boss.
Awesome. Well, I remember the Final Fantasy VII remake trailer has like a shot that is the final shot in the game. Like, what? Okay.
And not Square Enix, but the one that's more recent that I remember is the Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance trailer. Where I'm like, all right, this can't be that bad. And then they show something like, wait a minute, why in the world would you show that in a trailer? With the new route.
Before the trailer even came out, I would literally ping our reviewer of Visions of Mana to spoil everything.
Yeah,
to get a response, but without that response, I'm not watching that trailer.
You don't need to. They've released plenty of other trailers that show the same things.
They've released a demo. You can play the demo.
Here, how about this? If you're already planning to play a game, there's no reason to really watch the trailers of it. If you're already planning to play the video game,
dang.
This next one I'm going to have to lean on Adam to talk about. Adam or Josh. But a game that came out a couple years ago that Adam was pretty high on and wrote a very kind of a cool op-ed on is Romancing Saga Minstrel Song Remastered. So this is a remastered version for all consoles for a game that originally came out on PS2. And then there was new news on it this week that was kind of interesting because I don't know if you have like a framework or a precedent for this, but it's being re-released with new localization, but in a physical form. Adam, can you kind of talk about the nuances here?
This announcement is a co-announcement between Square Enix and Red Art Games. I have a feeling like Red Art Games came up in a podcast recently for something. I don't remember what, but Red Art Games...
Elrobentaro's Wanderings, yes. I believe.
So Red Art Games is like a boutique French publisher slash... They're sort of like a limited run games kind of thing too, where they do like limited retail stuff also. They are so far primarily the publisher behind a lot of those Bushiroad titles, like Rear Sakai or Elrent Taros Wanderings or whatever it's called now. It changed names. They're doing that Goblin Slayer game. They're doing, I think, a Macross game, I want to say.
The Macross game's been out for quite a while.
Well, English versions.
But the English version has to cut out... Was it the original Macross characters in it from Harmony Gold problems?
I don't know. Macross. I know it's a mess. But anyways, so Red Art Games, you might have seen them talking about these Bushiroad titles, but they are collaborating with Square Enix here to basically do a retail release of Minstrel Song Remastered because it never got one, at least in the West. It was just a digital-only Square Enix game back in the day, back in the day being 2 years ago or whatever it was. And Square Enix has had a handful of those. And I know you probably could have gotten there might have been like a PlayAsia, Asian version that had English or whatever, but this is an actual Western release you can buy at retailers. But not only that, but it also has been localized into the European languages, so French, Italian, German, and Spanish, this is the first game in the series to get those translations. So in the press release for this, they basically said that actually Red Art Games reached out to Square Enix to basically do this. Like, hey, we're going to take this game. We can create a retail release for you. We can do this localization, like for these European languages for you, and basically sell a new version of the game. Which is, like Brian said, I think that's kind of unprecedented where Square Enix has a different publisher, like re-release a game and add their own localization to it. The closest thing I can think of is Forever Entertainment in the Front Mission remakes, because that's kind of taking a Square Enix IP and doing what they want with it. It is kind of a, it has some caveats though. One, this is basically a new version of the game, meaning the old versions of the games, if you bought them already, are not going to be updated. So if you're living in France and you're like, oh wow, I'd love to play this game in French, you have to buy it, the new version. Old version won't be updated. It just won't. It's a new version of the game.
Sorry, I forget if you said this, but I'm just trying to keep it on my head. Is the new version physical only, or is it going to have like a separate?
Oh, it has a digital version also. So that means whenever this comes out next year, when you go to Nintendo Switch eShop and look up Romancing Saga or Minstrel Song, it's going to show up twice, I guess. unless they like remove the old one from Square Enix. I don't know.
There's no precedent for that. That never happened.
I mean, Square Enix has done that themselves, but this is weird that we have like a separate publisher with a different version. Anyways, and also this new version with like new languages, not coming to PC at all. It's not.
Okay, so that's why you said eShop and not Steam, huh?
Exactly. Okay. Now, I don't know if Square Enix has like the rights to take this localization from Red Art Games and say, hey, thank you for the localization services, and we now have owned that, and we're going to sell this on Steam. I don't know. Or update our Steam version. There's also a mobile version. That's probably not happening. But anyways, it's kind of a weird release. But yeah, it's a new version of Minstrel Song Remastered that's basically, gameplay-wise, exactly the same. It is now available in a physical form in the West and has the European translations. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. I know Red Art Games has been kind of like popping onto the scene out of nowhere. I don't know. It's kind of odd. Because it's this, Elrontaro's Wanderings, I think. Was it Tokyo Clan Pool as well?
That was East Asia Soft.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Let me see what else. Let me look up Red Art Games, what they're showing.
Yeah.
They have the Sunsoft collection.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Like, sure. Those three Sunsoft games, none of them are really RPGs. They have the Macross Shooting Insight game coming out in the West.
Were they also Goblin Slayer?
Yeah, Goblin Slayer, Elrontaro's Wanderings. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Elrontaro's Wanderings just barely came out, like, as well this past week.
Yeah. Right? I haven't really heard much about it.
Look, it's all right. Just play Silent Hope instead. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, there you go. There's a our clock. Reporter on the scene.
I'm on the Steam page for Elrontaro's Wanderings, which came out 2 days ago. It's got one review.
On Steam, it came out 2 days ago. I think it was like 7 days ago or something.
Yeah, but it's even then, like, one review on Steam in 2 days is still, even for a niche game, like, that's really... People don't know this game exists.
Well, I think.
$45, yeah. And the game, it feels like this page isn't even like fully translated, because I'm on Steam right now and it says buy and then Japanese characters. Rear Sakai, I suppose.
Yeah, like, it's not even like the Steam portion is like, man, this is really expensive. Really?
Yeah.
It's a very budget title, to be honest. I $45 is a bit too steep for me, personally, I would say.
You played this game on Switch, didn't you? The Japanese version?
Yeah.
I just wanted to know if the localization quality was like good or not.
The story was like very iffy. I definitely did not care for the stuff that happened in the real world. It's like the isekai world is okay, but at the end of it, it's just like, that was it? This game's short and it felt really bare bones to me.
Yeah, even the Steam store page for this game has Japanese screenshots. Like, they're not translated. Okay.
It's just authentic. I don't know.
Who wants to cough off $45 to tell us how the localization is?
You sound like you volunteered. I don't know.
Dang.
All right, we got a couple trailers and a couple news bits for the upcoming, another big game that we have circled on our calendars. Metaphor, Reed Fantasio. Of course, this is the new IP from Atlus that's coming out in October, on October 11th. So first, we got kind of a listing of the English voice cast. It's a combination of American and British actors, and I'll be honest, I was not really familiar with most of these names. Like, I looked down the list of the protagonist is voiced, it's Caleb Yen there, who is
he's the main character
in Honkai Star Road, the male version.
There you go. So yeah, this is an Atlus game with a full, I think, fully voiced protagonist.
Yeah.
And then a few of the other names for the rest of the cast are there. Let's see. Stuart Clark is Dion in Final Fantasy 16. Pretty distinct voice there. We have Alejandra Reynoso, who is Neon in Final Fantasy Origin, Chained to Paradise. And then a few other names I don't recognize. So I don't know. To me, it seems like kind of fresh blood, kind of not names that at least I'm super familiar with. So it seems like a pretty fun.
The voice for Hulkenberg is Kristen Atherton. And when you look up this actor, she's mostly done like audiobooks, like a ton of audiobooks.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I actually think that's cool. Like,
yeah,
for someone to do, you know, acting a character, you know, obviously shared skill set required, but just like a different, you know, sort of acting. Like, it's kind of, and she hasn't done a lot of characters before, so that's actually really cool to me, to be honest.
Yeah, a little off tangent, but there's like one anime series that I watch. It's called 86. It's based on a light novel. If you buy like the audiobook, they got the voice actors from like, you know, from the show to do the audiobook.
Yeah, they actually do that quite a bit for anime or light novel adaptations going to anime. Like, they get the anime voice actors to do the audiobook, which is really cool.
So I haven't listened to a lot of audiobooks myself, only one actually fully from beginning to end. I don't know what's more popular, but like, to me, it seems like it's more conventional that when an audiobook is voiced, it's a single person that just gives different characters different like alterations to their voice.
Yeah.
So they'll just kind of like speak differently for different characters. Though there are some audiobooks that does have like a full cast where characters will be a character in the audiobook. It might depend on the type of story or whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So I'm curious, like, if Kristen Atherton, like, oh, I voice so many different types of characters in all these audiobooks, because, you know, you have to pitch down if you're being a male character that's older potentially, or you know, mythical creature, or, you know, children character. You know, it's one of those things where who knows what, that's probably really good for like developing range as an
anyways
actor.
They released a new trailer. They've released a lot of footage for this game. So I watched the trailer.
You know, arguably too much, but I get it.
I know.
Yeah.
It doesn't show anything like more that, like, I'm sure tiny bits and pieces, but it's not like anything you haven't really already expected to be in the game. You're traveling around the world. You're trying to build your candidacy as like for the king, or for your campaign for the throne. And so there's a lot of like these bonds that you make, and that's kind of how it incorporates this sort of like virtues, like persona-ish social stats and relationships as part of this like candidacy or whatnot. So there's a new trailer for that. But also two of those voice actors, Stuart Clark and Kristen Atherton, who you were just talking about, did talk with the Xbox team, part of the Xbox live stream, and I watched this. And they like seem to be really into their like characters and their roles, and they are talking about like their basically experiences in terms of like doing the characters and whatnot and voicing. And Stuart Clark was actually saying, you know, how he got into like the mood to voice his character. I guess he was taking the train to the voice acting like studio, like the voiceover studio, and to get into character, get in the mood, he brought his Nintendo Switch and he was playing Valkyria Chronicles.
Nice.
That's what he did to do that. And they're talking about like his character Stroll is like basically, I guess, like he's your right hand man. You know, he speaks his mind, but he's kind of like your best pal sort of guy. And Hulkenberg is sort of this stoic knight trying to reclaim their glory, and also eats a lot of weird food. I guess is there a quirk? So. Yeah, it was a fun. If you like the English voice cast stuff, you know, these two actors are on stream kind of talking about it. Pretty fun.
I feel bad because I'm like, but the Japanese voice cast for Metaphor is like crazy. It's like crazy. I showed you the list before, Chad. You're like, yeah, there's like a Hollywood fucking cast.
Yeah, it's like they put their top A game every time.
Like Hulkenberg is like Sayori Hayami, and she's like my favorite voice actress. It's just like, fuck.
I can't keep getting away with this.
I don't know. It's going to be a tough choice. I still think I'd go Japanese voices, but, you know, they have a pretty solid list. But it's hard, man. It's a difficult choice.
Honkai Star Rail has a top-tier A-cast Japanese voice, but you still went with the dub. That tells you can withstand anything.
Yeah, I mean, I have the fucking Wuthering Waves thing still in English, and I don't think their English voice sounds as great. I still stuck with it. I don't know. We'll see.
So this next one I did not watch, but it's about gameplay trailers for specifically the Warrior class for Dragon Age: The Veilguard. I guess these were a snippet of very small trailers that were kind of like then stitched together to kind of give a gameplay overview. So they talk about like gear, they talk about buffs, and they talk about combat. And we talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago about how the UI is a little bit crowded. So here's some of the slower, a little bit more direct gameplay footage with all the UI in place, all the markers on the ground and et cetera. But I can't really speak to it because, like, I'll just admit there was a shit ton of trailers and I did not watch this one.
Basically, they released it's on like the EA blog site. It's like a very long, thorough post. Like, here's everything you'd want to know about Warriors. And there's a lot of text, too. If you like reading, you kind of go through a lot of the different combat basics and things about Warriors also. And then, like, throughout the blog post, they had four different, like, YouTube videos. Like, we're talking about different components of the combat. But they actually were kind of smart. I was actually reading this, and I was like, man, it kind of sucks that these gameplay is actually separated into four separate videos. But even at the end of the blog post, we're like, we put all these clips all together into one video for convenience. And I was actually like, thank you. This is actually nice to have it just one video with all the different footage kind of all at once. And Josh linked it in the other channel here. And I kind of wish they showed this when they showed off the game at Summer Game Fest. In terms of like actually seeing like here's combat with a class, with a character, with a full party, with, you know, a full suite of abilities, rather than what they did show at Summer Game Fest, which is sort of like the very first level with literally one skill, very cinematic and tutorialized. I think in a glance,
not the greatest vertical slice.
Yeah, I think in a glance the combat looks good, you know, action combat. It definitely is Mass Effect-ish, where you basically pull up a reticle to tell your allies like what you want them to target, who you want them to, what skills you want them to do, and whatnot. It showed, you know, different like buff abilities and, you know, like doing this attack does a certain sort of status or whatever. I think that all looks good. Basically, my primary concern at this point, you know, first of all, you don't really know the combat till you play it, but also it's like I really hope it's more than just like. Like level design is more than just like battle corridors and like,
yeah,
you know, little battle, you know, sections of a linear path, which, you know, this trailer, this footage doesn't, you know, show one way or the other. It's kind of hard to show that, but it's more that larger structure that I'm curious about.
Yeah. Like Final Fantasy 13, I thought it had good combat too, but the, you know, when it was just hyper linear like that for most of the game, like, I hope this is not just Octopath dead ends, like, oh, clearly there's I should go on this very short fork that clearly dead ends over there and then go back to the combat on the main fork. But yeah, I kind of want to see some of that midterm gameplay rather than just moment to moment.
Yeah, I do think it's definitely a better showing than what they showed.
It is definitely a way better showing than like what their reveal was. I'm with you, Adam. They should have fucking shown this. Like, it, like, especially like the skill tree stuff, and, you know, some of the itemization stuff is like interesting, at the very least. But it's just like, but the UI fucking sucks in the middle of combat, man. It just blows. Especially when you're pulling up like the ally wheel to tell them what to do. It just looks like a mess. But, you know, I don't know if there's a better way to fucking do it. Surely there has to be. It's okay. You know, they have a big emphasis on like, hey, there's a stagger bar on enemies. And then when they have no stagger bar, you can press a QT or a button prompt to do big damage to them.
There you go.
I know. Stagger system is cool and stuff, but you know what I'm really glad about? Wukong did not have a stagger bar.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like one of like the best things about Wukong is like you can actually like push aggression on enemies and like and feel like you're powerful and rewarded for it. Like you can actually like press offense in that game, and you don't have to like wait at your turn because the game tells you it's your turn. It's like you create those opportunities for yourself, you know, organically. It was nice to just like have that. Hey, you don't have to worry about like a stagger bar to get DPS windows.
The burn phase or the stagger phase.
I don't mind when like the occasional game does it, but when every fucking game feels like it's doing it, it's like it's
yeah, it gets old fast, right?
You know, it's like fuck, man. Yeah. So I don't know. Like Dragon Age, this new Dragon Age game is like, Hopefully it's good, you know. I mean, I still have a lot of doubts about it, and they showed off the warrior class too, which is like kind of always a boring class to me, but I get why people use it. And it also sucks that like 3/4 of the gameplay they showed is like just blocking off like 2/3 of the screen at the left to like you know prevent spoilers, and but you can't even see our health bar until like the last part of it. Okay, there it is. So, I mean, it was nice for them to show it. I don't know if I'm still going to get it. Part of me says I do have to, out of obligation, for like when people talk about it on the site, it's like nice to have like some time with the game in it, but it's also either. So I don't know. But that's always the hard thing about like end of the year discussions on the site. It's like, it's hard to have like a meaningful discussion if like you're talking to someone who hasn't played the game. So it's just like, okay. So I'm just like talking to like almost a blank slate. It's like I have to convince you that this game is good, even though you haven't played any put any time into it. It is always the hard part of it.
Hey, you just so you know, you've done that successfully to me on multiple occasions. It was end of the year
Megaton Musashi actually good.
I think it's good.
I was going to somebody else to buy it, but I didn't buy it for myself. Am I in the wrong here?
I was just predicting a game that Josh would support this year that no one else has played yet.
Yeah, Josh got me to play Aegis Rim, and Josh got me to play. Oh, I'm blanking on the name. The indie horror like roguelike.
Fuck, what was it called? World of Horror.
Yeah, those two. And both were choice. Those are good. We still have a lot of headlines here, but now it's, I think, no promises, organized by date, because a lot of these were trailers that accompanied a demo date, a release date, a shadow drop, or a delay of a date in some cases. So kind of like a release date rundown, but a lot of these have kind of like some trailers or anything going along with it. The first one that we have is slated to release early in September, the Ace Attorney Investigations Collection. Now has a demo available on basically anything that the game's coming out on. So if you're interested in Ace Attorney Investigations, I guess if you're interested, you might not need a demo. But if you're interested in a demo, there is a demo available for that collection on Xbox, PS4, Switch, and PC. Let's see. We also have a new demo available soon for the upcoming Card NCL. This is the card battle RPG coming from Inti Creates. Slated to release in October, so the demo will come out in a couple weeks on September 4th. This is the one that has the grid-based gameplay, heavily based on... Is this the one with the one that's based on Battle Network?
Yes.
It's sort of like Battle Network. Definitely at first glance, but the gameplay seems to be like more like deck-building-esque. Mm-hmm. A demo will serve this game well. Hopefully it's like a really good demo, because it's definitely a given. It's like it's hard to show. And it's like, it feels like it'll make sense once you play it and get hands on for yourself.
The next one, Adam, you might be able to speak to this one. Towerborn. This is the game from Stoic, the developers behind Banner Saga. It's the free to play service Castle Crasher like.
We didn't know it cooperative at this point.
Yeah. So kind of cooperative beat 'em up gameplay. It will be entering Steam Early Access on September 10th, and then we'll release on Xbox console and then come out of Early Access on PC in 2025. Adam, you got to see this game just last week, right? Was it this one?
Yeah. I don't think I've actually shared this on the podcast yet, but basically last week or this week, earlier this week, I went to LA. They kind of had an Xbox event there that was sort of like, hey, we're going to have just, you know, kind of a local mini version of what we're showing at Gamescom.
We have Gamescom at home.
Right, Gamescom at home, literally. And so they had a bunch of the Xbox games there, as well as a few third-party games. Like, I got to play Metaphor again, and actually had a slightly different demo than what they had at Summer Game Fest. But anyways, Towerborn was one of the games they had there, and I played a little bit of it. And so, like, we only got to play, like, a single level, and it's kind of what you'd expect for one of those side-scroller, multiplayer, beat-em-up type games. The ones that come to mind for me are Castle Crashers or, like, even, like, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games. like the arcade games or the, some of the newer ones, and they actually said explicitly those both those were like inspirations for this, and it seems fun enough. Like I ran into our one of our former staff members, Kazuma, at the event, and we played a little bit of a game, you know, and just these sorts of games are just fun to play, you know, pick up and play, and they're not especially deep, but they're deep enough where you have like four different characters with four different types of abilities that complement each other well. Like for example, one of the so in this game, the different characters are basically like your different weapon types. So one of the characters is Sword and Shield, and that's more of a defensive unit. There's another character who's more like a punch person, punch guy or punch boy or punch girl, who's a little bit more squishy, but can do a lot more maybe like damage per second. There's a war club guy who has a sort of a, like a super armor where he doesn't flinch. He'll take damage, but he won't get interrupted as much, and so on. There's the last character is like a dual dagger sort of thief type person. And, you know, it's fun, but the one concern, the main concern that I and probably most people have at this point is like, how is this going to work like long term in terms of this is a free to play game, but not for early access. For early access, you actually have to like buy it. You buy like a founder's pack, and that's what gets you early access. So it's not free to play in early access in a way. But once the game
that's is a little really, bit hard, so
yeah, it's a little weird. But once the game comes out next year, like in full, it'll be free to play. They talk about a lot of the monetization is going to be like cosmetics and like colors and not like, you know, stuff that really affects gameplay much. But there's no specifics on it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. Like, how is
it? I think it's like one of those games that like at first glance it looks like, you know, Castle Crashers like, hey, one and done, like, you know, very simple game that like, you know, people will get to like have a lot of fun with together, like, you know, multiplayer wise. But then it's like the thing that's like came out of left field for me, because me and Adam have been like kinda keeping our eye on this game, you know, here and there over the last few months, and it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's a free to play like ongoing live service thing, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess. And you know, they had to like, and they published like a very lengthy blog post of like why they went this decision, why they went this route, and like, you know, tried to like assure players that like, you know, it won't fall into like the common free to play game pitfall traps, and so forth. There's just like it's hard to like imagine like what to think about this.
Yeah, and like, also I kind of get it, but it's also a little bit concerning to me. Like the blog post itself, which it's public and we posted about it, as well as what the developers were saying there at this event that I went to, they're really hyper-focusing on like, we're going to create a dialogue with the players. We're going to listen to feedback. We're going to implement changes based on, you know, based on feedback. And feedback is extremely good. Like, I think you definitely want some feedback, but it almost felt, I feel like you don't want to like bend over backwards to cater to an audience either.
Yeah.
And
it's on the same way as like when Riot Games ran its 2XKO beta, like the fighting game based off League of Legends, and they had like a similar sort of statement that they came out with, like, you know, they're like trying to like, you know, gonna listen to feedback and like gonna work with players, and you know, because they had a lot of concerns with this like beta, that's showing a very 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 early build of the game, like in development. And like they kind of fall into like the same similar line of like, you know, where at some point there has to be a vision for the game and just can't be feedback.
I was actually thinking that, like, I didn't want to be too heady, but at some point you're going to be like, you kind of should have. And this is going to sound like, obviously I'm not a game developer, but like I feel at least from an outsider that you should have a vision for your game. You kind of know what you want it to be, not everyone's going to like it. So if you try to incorporate feedback to such an extent that it compromises that. And we've kind of seen that happen in some places, so it's not like unheard of. So at some point, you should say like, "No, this is what we have in mind. This is our game. There's going to be friction here that not everyone will enjoy this, but you know, we will take feedback into account." But it's not really that fine a line in terms of like bending over backwards, as Adam said.
At some point, like when your game becomes so much about feedback, it's a game for nobody then.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, obviously Towerborn's not out yet, but that doesn't change from the fact that's Adam's interpretation from the way that they presented themselves.
Yeah, they were really hammering that, like, and also it's a little bit awkward in that the demo that we were playing like me being an RPG head, we were playing the demo, and like at the end of the battle screen, it shows like my character had like these pieces of equipment and they were max level. And I was like, how does this work? What does this equipment system works? And they were like, actually, that's the old system. That's not how it's going to work anymore. Which sort of felt weird to me. Like, okay. this game is releasing in early access in like less than a month. But this demo you're showing is already like, I guess, severely outdated.
That reminds me of when I played Deck of Police last year at TGS, and I walked up to it, and it's like, this battle system is completely different from the reveal trailer.
Yeah. But especially in this case, it's like literally I'm playing a demo less than a month before it comes out in early access. And it's like, yeah, this demo's like equipment system is it's totally different now. Like, hot is this coming in terms of just your actual just design of the game systems? I don't like, I don't want to be too cynical. But they said it's more going to be like a rarity, like loot system, like a Diablo, literally what they said. Where like, rather than leveling up equipment to a strong extent, you're more just like playing a level and getting upgraded equipment. I don't know the details because they weren't there, but yeah.
All right.
So like basically long preview short, like the moment-to-moment gameplay seems like a fun co-op brawler. Nothing too fancy. Seems, you know, just enough involved enough that you have that it's not mindless, but you can play it, pick it up with friends and whatnot. But it's just all the like pricing and model and longer term game structure stuff like is a big question mark. And I'm going to be writing a preview on this, which will basically just, you know, be adding text what I'm saying here.
So, are you accepting feedback for that preview?
Only from Brian. Okay.
So yeah, we stated this, but just restated early access September 10th for Towerborn. You have to pay to get in. This is one that we kind of knew was coming, but we didn't know exactly when. Final Fantasy 16 will be releasing on PC on Steam and Epic on September 17th, and it has a demo that is playable now, and the demo was even updated recently when it first released. People are having some performance issues, it sounds like, with a recent update to the demo, which is available now. A lot of those have been kind of addressed. But yeah, if you've been waiting,
it's
for
got
PC,
Josh's favorite thing, which is 30 FPS cutscenes.
Yeah.
There's already a mod to fix that.
Oh,
engine ones.
If I need a fucking mod to at least fix that, someone make that for Visions of Mana also, by the way.
It just kind of, like, to me, that's one thing where I don't know how the cake is baked. But, like, if within days of a demo releasing, someone can say, like, here, download this file and put it in your executable folder and it'll fix the cutscenes. Like, how come they just didn't do that? Like, what?
I feel really... it's like a creative choice. I feel like they're trying to make these scenes look more cinematic, but then it just looks jank in the end. You know what I'm saying?
One thing I will say about this demo that's been kind of fascinating is seeing how many people forgot just how poorly it actually ran on PS5. Because keep in mind, Digital Foundry pointed out that the 60 FPS mode on PS5 for this would dip down to 720p during battles to maintain 60 FPS. And I don't know what to tell you, but like a 3060 is weaker than a PS5. You're going to be using DLSS, even at 1080p, to maintain 60 FPS. And that's not the PC port being bad. That's just the game itself being heavy to run.
Yeah, yeah, like people finally realize that their system's not as strong as the PS5.
Well, even then, so like Adam, I saw many people commenting that like the performance mode on PS5 was like,
good.
It was
better than the issues. Alternative. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's serviceable, right? I mean, it's a tale as old as time for consoles now. At this point, we're like, are you willing to sacrifice frame rate for better visuals? Or are you ready to like have the game run more smoothly, but it'll kind of look like ass? It's like, well, you know. You can't have both.
Well, I'll be definitely be playing this because I'm the only one who hasn't.
PC. Yeah, but with a good enough PC, you can have both. So.
I definitely went to the demo and give it a try. It definitely didn't run smooth on the first day when I played it. Then after like the patch, it's like, oh, now I'm getting like stable frame rate all the time. But when the game came out, it was like nothing but stutter for me on the demo for some reason.
I guess it's worth mentioning, right? So this game is going to, the base game is going to be priced at $50 USD But for $70, you can get the complete edition that will have the DLCs bundled in. It's not like other releases you might have been used to where the DLCs already bundled in. This one, you just have to get the DLC separately on top of the base game. So it's not like a Game of the Year edition or anything that's being sold here.
I'll wait for a sale. I think I already have my dose of 16.
Have your dose of Ben Star Clive. You're looking to other pastures for that? For more Ben Star?
Yeah, it's called Kazan.
I am Kazan.
Here's two games that Adam, I think you played these both in person. You wrote up a feature around Summer Games Fest time where you looked at five different titles. Mm-hmm. Around that time.
Them all of them.
One of them was
well, except
one. Okay, perfect. That's what I thought. Okay,
you just I didn't play the Happy Bastards one. That was more of a presentation.
Oh, that's right. But these two you played. So one of these is so these two games really aren't intrinsically linked. I kind of have them linked here because you covered them at around the same time at Summer Games Fest. So this first one is called Farah: The Sundered Tribes. This is from the team behind Star Renegades. It's like an open world kind of survival monster hunter, like if I remember right. You play this around the June time frame. It will hit Steam Early Access on September 17th.
Nothing else coming out that day.
Yeah. So Adam, are you going to play this? Or are you going to play Final Fantasy 16?
I don't know if I'm that interested in Farah overall, but even if I was, I'd just wait until it's full release, you know. Not really interested in early access release of it.
Like, look, Adam Hardy has at least like an appropriate debuff on that studio because, like, I really like the pixel art Star Renegades, and it's not that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then the other one, Robots at Midnight, was another game that you played at Summer Games Fest. This one I forget more of the details on.
This one is a very lighthearted, very cartoony, very light Souls-like. And I mean Souls-like in that, like, yeah, the enemies respawn, and you can use your EXP as like an EXP source or money or whatever, you know, whatever. They literally said when I talked to them that it's meant to be more of a like a kid's Soul-like. Now, that's not verbatim what they said, but it's meant to be very lighthearted and whatnot, but.
That makes sense. Like, these gameplay mechanics don't immediately have to be something really hardcore. They can be something casual. Like, yeah, right. That's true. And that one, like I said, demo available now. Farah: The Sundered Tribes, Steam Early Access on September 17th.
I know Farah had at least it's had several demos. I don't know if one is currently available, but it shows up for those Steam festivals.
It feels like this more and more often the Steam demos are more long-term now. I remember a lot of them still are limited during the festival time, though. So
I guess I'm looking on Farah's
from what I understand
now, it doesn't have a demo, but it did.
Yeah, from what I understand, Valve actually tells like developers that if their game is close enough to launch to keep the demo up, especially if it's gotten like good metrics, which makes sense. So.
Here's just a console port release date. This is for, I hope I pronounced this right, Toho Genso Wanderer Foresight. It was originally released on PC back in May. It will release on PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch on September 18th.
Who's our biggest Toho fan? Is it Chow?
Probably me. Beaten Perfect Cherry Blossom.
What is this one? It's a roguelike.
It's the roguelike, but I only play the main games where it's a bullet hell. I don't touch the spin-offs. Except for the fighting game.
Cooking one?
That cooking one does count too.
I only play the main games and the cooking one.
I don't play the roguelike spin-offs, which this one is or whatever.
So what, next thing
I hate RPGs, I'm like, oh, relatable.
Damn. Somehow I become the guy that reviews Total Games in the future. Is that what happens?
Yeah, I love it, Fairy Tale.
Oh no.
I'm just, oh, it's not reviewed very well on Steam, but it's mixed, which means some people do like it. Let's see here. Here's one that has an accompanying gameplay trailer. This is Beyond Galaxy Land. We first covered this in April. It is what we call a 2.5D adventure RPG, releasing on basically all consoles and PC. It's going to be releasing on September 24th. And this one does have a little bit more of a Star Renegades kind of pixel art style, actually more like Sword and Sorcery a little bit. I think this is a single developer.
It is, yes.
But I don't actually remember.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a very satirical type of RPG in terms of its toning and the way that the trailer's presented.
Your pet hamster becomes humanoid and gets a gun.
We also have a Notch Shodan showing up at the YouTube thumbnail of that trailer.
That's just like a cameo?
No, it's just green floating cam.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not actually. Okay,
no.
It's meant to look like her, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not actually her.
Here's another one from, I think, another single developer that we also covered earlier this year. This is The Nameless. Sorry, let me say this again because it's hard to say in words. It's a complicated title. The Nameless, Slay Dragon. So four words, The Nameless, colon, Slay Dragon. So this is also it's like a dungeon RPG made by an individual developer. You take a party of four and then... I don't know if these are dungeons are procedurally generated or not, but there's a decent amount of gameplay footage that shows a lot of the class selections, menuing, exploration. And it'll be coming out on PC on September 26th, come to Nintendo Switch at some point next year.
I showed this to my a friend of mine. It's like this person has clearly been inspired by Ruina, so this game might be fucking awesome. Because he's a big Library of Ruina fan.
Here's one that has a release date that we talked about earlier this year. This is an indie game that's very, very clearly and overtly inspired by Skies of Arcadia. Sky Oceans Wings for Hire will be releasing on all platforms on October 10th.
This is from a Chilean studio in Santiago. It seems like...
For me, unfortunately,
like this one is pure... dogfight turn-based RPG. So Skies of Arcadia had also more of a traditional turn-based mode too, with
character based.
Yeah, but this game is purely all your combat are these turn-based dogfights. At least
to me, I know Hillary me, but I have not played Skies of Arcadia. So I don't have that nostalgia, and then the art style here just really doesn't do it for me. It feels like really mid 2000s Nickelodeon or something, super duper Cal Arts. I don't know how to describe it. It's fine, it's just not my preference. But coming out on October 10th,
you're saying you wouldn't play a turn based Ren and Stimpy RPG.
Yeah, that depends on whether it's didn't Ren and Stimpy have two runs, one that was on Nickelodeon and one that was on Adult Swim or something like that.
The good run.
Yeah, so that one completely depends. Another October release. This was a isometric tactical RPG called Flint Treasure of Oblivion, very nautical pirate themed. Coming out on October 24th for PC, PS5, and Xbox.
This one actually looks sort of cool. It's tactical pirate RPG with some comic book style.
There's a comic book style cutscenes. Yeah, this one looks
pretty cool. It reminds me a little bit of Expeditions Rome, except that the comic book style is completely I don't know if there's really a point of comparison for that. So an isometric grid-based game. Is it grid-based even? Let me check.
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
It's tactical for sure.
But then you get comic book panels to deliver the narrative on top of overlaid on top of that. So that's pretty unique. This one looks pretty cool.
Yeah, if this wasn't releasing at the end of October when everything else is releasing. Bad release date for me.
Here's the one that I accidentally teed up too early. But yeah, November 20th, Genshin Impact launching for Xbox.
The Microsoft executives have stopped kicking themselves in the foot for not taking the Genshin deal pre-release.
So when does Genshin come out for Switch?
I don't know. Ask the tweet that made it.
When the Switch 2 comes out, whatever that is.
I think that kind of covers us for specific release dates. So the rest are more delays or go into 2025 general release windows. So here's one that's kind of interesting that maybe I'll hand over to Josh. Explain this headline, Josh. Fantasy Life I, The Girl Who Steals Time, delays its release date and will announce further plans at a postponed event.
Feels pretty clear to me. So basically, it's just
very specific. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, here's an alternate release or alternate title. Fantasy Life I has been indefinitely delayed. It will be announced at an indefinitely delayed event.
There you go. It's that easy. So
people sometimes don't like the indefinitely. They don't like the word indefinitely.
They need to like go check a dictionary. So Level 5 continues its delay spree after delaying other titles. They got Megaton Musashi out somehow, miraculously. They announced, hey, we're not going to meet this release date of... It was initially going to come out like around October, I believe, for Fantasy Life I. I just said, we're not going to make that date. We're going to announce it at this Level 5 Vision 2024 to the world's children, in all caps, online event. It's like, okay, when's this event? And it's like, okay, well, the last time we heard of it was supposed to happen in April, and then they postponed it to summer 2024, and they have not yet dated the event as of the time of this recording. So I'm like thinking, okay, summer 2024, which summer is ending next month. So they... I don't know. So when are they going to share the release timing for this delayed game now? Who knows? Because we don't know the date of that event at this point.
And I need to mention that the Level 5 Vision 2024 to the world's children is... That's a title of an event, I guess.
Yeah. So... I don't know. I Level 5 has a lot of big plans and also big production schedules.
So they got Megaton Musashi out. There's been this ongoing beta testing for...
Oh, yeah, for Inazuma 11.
Right. Deca Police, we haven't seen anything from since like really early this year. So
I guess that makes sense, I guess.
And then Layton. Layton was always later.
Man, I thought Deca Police already came out.
Actually, it looks like we hadn't really seen anything from Deca Police since last TGS.
Child getting out of his fucking rock is like, oh yeah, Deca Police isn't out? That's weird.
Nope. That was the most interesting one to me.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
Here's another one that's for this winter. They actually say, okay, let me just not bury the lead. Titan Quest 2 will be launching for Steam Early Access this winter, which is fine. That seems cool, and it seems like a cool game that I know a lot of people are really interested in because there's like a cult following of the original game that got remastered. Just the winter, they call it Winter 2024, 2025. Like, it's just like, to me, Winter 2025 is like starting next December. That's the way I think of it, but I guess there's really no rules in place.
Yeah, so every company's a little different in how they describe it. Basically, yeah, like
this winter, so December.
It could be December, January, February, even March.
Yeah, so there was no news other than that they're planning to release in early access this winter, other than they did release a lot of new screenshots where, hey, the environmental art for this game looks really neat. And that's kind of the main thing they're showing off in those screenshots.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, it comes out, like, you know, I'm sure it's going to be early access, but hopefully it's like, it's a meaty early access, you know. Make the case right away.
In February 2025, we're going to get Tales of Iron 2, Whiskers of Winter. This is the action RPG where you play as a rat? I was just like, it's a rat or a mouse?
Rats are good. True. Frogs are bad.
Okay.
There's only the Geralt's voice actor, right?
Yes.
Yes. I always make note of that.
The rat game where frogs are bad. It's voiced by Geralt. And then another game that got delayed into 2025. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, which was originally slated to release this fall at some point, has been pushed back to first half of 2025.
Adam gave me some shit, and I get it, and it's funny, but, so, I mean, the original release date for this game was, sometime, was it 2020?
I think they just said late in 2020.
Yeah.
They said that.
And yeah. But then obviously, we're talking about the current Bloodlines 2 that was inherited by the Chinese room, developers, the Chinese room. Which had
which is a British developer, date. By the way.
Yeah, which had an original release date of fall 2024, which is now being pushed back to the first half of 2025. Obviously for polishing issues, and now you know the extra time allows them to add in some more stuff, like maybe more new endings.
I don't mean to be too cynical, but this game it's hard to be positive on when it's like literally changing developers. Like the original creators who were had ties to the original Bloodlines game were like kicked off. A lot of the updates they've been showing for this game for the longest time didn't have any like screenshots. It was all concept art and text, which is, concept art is great, but eventually you got to actually start showing what your game looks like. And then they sort of started showing what the game looks like, but not so much. And also like the Chinese room last couple of games were not received that well. So it's just kind of like, okay, I don't have a whole lot of faith in this game. I'll give it a chance, but it's hard to be optimistic.
Also like there's also just like the biggest project this developers had to date in terms of sheer ambition and scope as well. It's like, can they support that? It's like,
And also their games that they release are not usually like RPGs, so
that does make me curious. So the new developer is the Chinese room. The old developer was Hardsuit Labs. And like, is Hardsuit Labs still exist? Like, are they working on things or what are they doing? I'm just curious. I'm pulling up their website, portfolio. Lego Fortnite. Okay. I mean, that's a big project. Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go. Yeah, Lego Fortnite is... They still have Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 on their website, though. Okay.
Awesome.
Huh. Well, I guess maybe they work on that. We have art assets in the game that we made or something like that. So it's just interesting to see there. Okay, cool.
If you think about it, they're probably making more money off of Lego Fortnite than they would have off of Bloodlines 2.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Lego Fortnite is a massive get if that's what their primary focus is. Like, oh, okay, that's not nothing.
Well,
that's
we'll instantly drop Bloodlines 2 for this project.
There you go. And then I must have undersold it because that's actually now I didn't grab everything that we covered like on the website rpgsite.net, but that's everything that I found into the podcast here. So at the mere 2 hour mark, was there anything else? Like I was at work, so I could not watch any like the opening night live shows or anything as they were airing. But for Adam, who had the event, Josh, who covered the plurality of all the news during it, I know James also helped as well. Was there anything else that was shown during that you want to kind of call attention to that we didn't explicitly kind of cover here?
I think
the one that I can think of is, I do remember seeing some on that.
It's like it's got the early access starting on November 15th for that. I'm pretty excited for Path of Exile 2. So I'll probably hop into that early access depending on how meaty it is. It's probably going to be big. I might just check that out. But I think.
So that kind of covers everything that we had to talk about that I had listed on our outline here, though obviously it was not everything that was covered at Gamescom. I know there was a Borderlands 4 teaser, just basically saying that it's coming next year without any other very specific details other than it exists.
Really good timing after the movie. Really good.
And then we didn't really have a clear spot to talk about it on the podcast because I didn't see like a trailer or a package or a newsletter for it. But Adam, you did get to play a few other games before we wrap this up during your time in LA for, Gamescom at home. I know you did get to play Avowed, obviously, which is one of the games we have circled for next year. I don't know if you want to speak about that.
Actually, I have a few things to say. Yeah. For this.
Oh, specifically about Avowed or just in general? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So basically, they had a room with a lot of the Obsidian developers and PR people, and they had, they had stations for Avowed that a lot of people got to play. And I've seen several previews pop up over the last couple of days. A lot of them are pretty positive, and I'm pretty positive on what we played too. I'll have my own preview up, in a day or two, or I just hadn't got a chance to get around to it yet. But here's basically what they showed. So Avowed is the next game from Obsidian Entertainment. It's a first-person RPG set in the world of Aeora, which is the Pillars of Eternity universe, right? Coming out next February 11th, I think? Or is it the 18th? One of those days. One of them is Kingdom Come, and one of them is Avowed. I just forget which is which. Anyways, I got to play an early level in the game. I don't remember what the area is called, but you're basically looking for an expedition team. And you are basically going there with one of the companions, whose name is Kai. And he's one of those blue creatures, like the blue humanoids, whose name... Like, I have not played Pillars of Eternity, so I don't remember what this race is called. The character
it's
is actually...
It's like Aomawa or something like that. It's kind of like a Hawaiian or Polynesian themed.
Right. The character is voiced by Garrus. I feel like everyone makes an emphasis of that, because he kind of just sounds like Garrus. Similar in personality, too, from Mass Effect. And basically, we got to... You're exploring, like, this zone. It's like this kind of cavernous overgrowth sort of area with some water. You know, you do some swimming in this area, going underwater or under some, like, ridges and whatnot. It's a very pretty game. Like, I feel like some of the trailers don't maybe do it justice for, like, this game looks pretty nice. I really like the color scheme of it. It's a little bit more cartoony than, like, a realistic, you know, action RPG or whatever. You know, lots of, like, bright blues and greens and reds and whatnot. During this demo, you could play as three different kinds of characters, like a physically attacking warrior sort of character, a long-range sort of dual pistol, you know, range sort of character, as well as, like, a mage. I did not play the mage. I played the warrior, and I played, like, the ranged dual pistol type of character. So it is first-person combat, and so it kind of has the sorts of things you might expect with first-person combat, in that, like, it's action RPG, you're attacking in real time, you gotta try to be really careful of your surroundings, but you can't see behind you, so you kind of have to be, you know, straightening around, maybe looking around to make sure you have your bearings properly. But it seemed pretty, you know, pretty solid in terms of what I played, in terms of, like, you know, enemy reactions, like what I could do for my abilities. It also has that sort of Mass Effect-ish sort of reticle that you can pull up. For example, one of Kai's abilities, he's practically Garrus, that he can do is he can do, like, he just kind of jumps into the zone and creates, like, a shockwave, kind of like an area of effect attack, and that was pretty useful. There was one of the boss fights I fought, you're fighting a bunch of skeletons, and it's kind of nice to kind of do some crowd control that way. Range unit, I think maybe I enjoyed a little bit better because you're staying a little bit further back so you can kind of get a better view of the battlefield versus, you know, first-person melee where you're kind of in the midst of all things and you can turn around and suddenly there's a skeleton right there. But it was pretty cool. I had a fun time playing through the demo. There's also just cool small things that aren't, you know, maybe not that interesting, but, like, there was actually a point in the demo where I'm fighting as my melee character, and Kai actually says, like, kind of shouts out, "To your right!" And I actually turned right, and there was a guy about to attack me. Like, oh, thank you, companion, for warning me that I was about to be attacked on my right side. I thought that was fun. But
now, you had mentioned in an earlier preview that, and correct me if I'm misremembering, but the game is also playable in third person, right?
I actually forgot about that. I didn't play it in third person at all, and I didn't even try it.
Okay, I'll give my next question. Yeah, this is the sort of game that I would too also play it in first person, but I remember that was kind of like a big thing. It's like, yeah, no, you can play it in third person from the earlier summer showcase. So I was just curious if you tried that, but you played it in first, it's just fine.
Yeah. And so, like, the level itself, you meet this, some of the more RPG-ish elements of it. You meet, like, a young traveler part of the expedition, and he's poisoned. And you have a couple of different, you know, options here of what you can do with him. Of course, you can help him, or you can just kill him if you're evil and steal his stuff. And so, you know, there's a little bit of stuff there, and Kai kind of comes into this dialogue and has his own, you know, kind of chimes in about what he thinks. So it kind of feels very Western RPG in that respect. There wasn't anything explicitly about like rapport with your character, with your companions, in terms of, like, he approved of this or not or whatever. I didn't see anything like that. So I don't know exactly how that might play. I know there's no romance in this game, but I don't know how else that works. I don't know if there's any sort of companion affinity or anything like that. And then we got to a later part of the demo. You meet a kind of like a golden sort of demigod idol person. I think they're called like god-touched or godlike or something like that. This is a Pillars thing. So feel free to chime in, Brian, if this makes sense to you. But
I think it is god-touched, but it's foggy. It's been a while.
I think it's godlike. I might be wrong. But anyways, this part of the demo, this character starts talking about a bunch of different like world building things in terms of like the different gods, and your character doesn't quite know like what like you are in terms of like your god touch, but I guess you don't know like the circumstances behind it, and you're trying to learn more about it. And this character actually starts talking about like some of the gods, and he actually mentioned a thing like this one god did something in Deadfire, like the Deadfire Archipelago. And I'm like, aha, that's a Deadfire reference that I totally missed because I don't know what you're talking about. And there were a lot of proper nouns. And
I was a little bit... Wheel.
Sorry?
Is that it? Was it Aethys?
Aethys, yeah. Because I guess this guy was god touched. He's like, Aethys is god touched or one of them. I don't know how this works. I haven't played these games. So I actually think I tweeted, like, I played Avowed and it makes me want to play Pillars. One, because I actually liked what I played. And like, hey, maybe I should play these other games that are in the same universe. But two, like, especially in this conversation that I had in this demo with this guy, his name is like Saragon or something like that. He's a new character. But there are a lot of proper nouns talking about the world and talking about events that clearly happened that I'm supposed to like know. And I'm not saying I like have to know them, but it's like, man, I wish I wasn't missing the context on this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, okay, so you're coming at this from a perspective right. That I presume a lot of players are going to be like, I haven't played those Pillars games, especially Deadfire that sold like crap, just being honest. And
Well, your character doesn't know about what happened either. So
that's a good way to frame it then. That way they can kind of tee you up and the player doesn't have to know. But if they do know, they can be in the know, so to speak.
But yeah, there was just a bunch of talk about like the world and the gods and something that happened in Deadfire and whatnot that I was just sort of like, you know, I kind of wish I had the context. I don't think you need it. And I'm sure if you play the game from the actual start, it probably clues you in a little bit better. But it definitely is not trying to divorce itself too strongly from the Pillars games. So, cool. And there is actually a handful of things you can do with this guy. This guy, he asks you to get a relic from like later down in this like cave-ish shrine area that you're in. And in one of my playthroughs, I actually ended up killing him. Not intentionally.
what accident?
He has a bunch of like devices around his like little base that you can affect with like your lightning abilities. And I was just like, what do these do? And he's like, please stop touching that. But I didn't listen to him, and I kept messing with him. And then he attacked me. Then I attacked him back and killed him. And he gave me a cool fire sword. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I was supposed to do that, but I got a sword out of it.
That's true freedom.
And then in another playthrough, the other playthrough I did, I actually helped him and, you know, didn't get his sword, but, you know, maybe I benefit later. I don't know.
How
and
long
I guess
did you have with the game then?
I guess
multiple playthroughs.
So I played it twice. I played the demo twice. You had an hour.
I was gonna say like how long did that take you? But you said an hour.
Like slightly more than an hour.
Okay, cool.
And I guess there's actually a way to like maybe anger him, but then talk him down. Or one of my friends at Digital Trends was talking about that. I'm like, oh, I definitely did not talk him down. I just killed him.
I murdered him.
And then apparently the expedition team that you're sent to find, apparently, at least in my demo, nobody found them. They're there. You can find them, but I guess they're hidden. And like you can just totally miss them. And I didn't find them in my first playthrough, probably because I killed the guide. I didn't get far enough. And I didn't get far enough in my second playthrough to even know if I missed them. But there's like, I guess the whole reason when you went down there to find this expedition team, they're kind of tucked away, I guess, in some hidden area that you're not necessarily going to find. So like stuff like that, stuff like the different ways you can treat this godlike person that you meet, the different ways you can treat the one expedition guy that you meet early on, the different class types that we touched on, you know, that we could play through, you know, some of that like role-playing freedom seems really cool to me. And I know some of the other previews I've seen have been pretty positive on it. obviously it's hard to say, you know, what the longer term structure of the game, if that's going to work, how well it's going to work, or like maybe the larger stories or the character companions that you're that you're meeting, how well are they written and whatnot.
Well, I forget if it was this summer or last winter, but I remember them saying, Obsidian being like, this is not a Skyrim, like this is like Outer Worlds, and they meant in terms of like framing of how the game is structured. But of course Outer Worlds is kind of received lukewarm, so it's not always the best point of comparison. Like, oh, Outer Worlds, why are you comparing it to that? I didn't like that game. But they meant more than like a small number of zones in a story that doesn't take 100 hours to beat, that you can approach in kind of like a guided fashion, but you do have some say. I remember them making that point of comparison and trying to like,
yeah,
say like, no, in terms of framework, that's what the sort of game it is.
But yeah, I'm actually sort of glad it got pushed back to next year, because it gives me a little bit more time to play the Pillars games. And, right, you know, obviously a lot of the people there.
I feel bad when you're like, is it God, like a God touch? Like, I don't remember. It's been too long.
A lot of the people there, of course, were big fans of Obsidian games, and I am too. I've played a lot of them. I just haven't played Pillars. Actually, one of the people I met there, he was telling me, I don't know if he was just, you know, maybe exaggerating, but he's like, oh yeah, the Outer Worlds was my game of the year 2019 or whatever it was. You know, he really loved it.
That's
and a lot of people love Deadfire. I could tell, you know, a lot of people saying
Deadfire was one of those somewhat rare, critically acclaimed commercial flop sort of things. Yeah.
You know, anyone who's a Josh Sawyer fan seems to love Deadfire, of course. So he has nothing to do with Avowed, you know, besides maybe some general consulting, but Deadfire was one of his projects for sure. I'm really eager to play more of this. So,
and was there anything else that you got to see in your time in LA as we close this up?
Oh yeah, so they had a handful of different demos there. They had Little Nightmares 3 from Bandai Namco. They had Ara: History Untold, which is also another Microsoft Grand Strategy game. I hung out with some of the Bandai Namco people for quite a bit, just because, why not? They had some German inspired drinks and whatnot. It was kind of a laid back, cozy little preview event, but it was fun.
Cool. And then, of course, next week, Josh will be over in Seattle to cover PAX West, and we'll wrap back up with him in 2 weeks, I presume, then, to talk about that. Though, so like I said, we'll be a little bit shorthanded the next couple of weeks for various couple of reasons, but we'll still hold this podcast. And if for some reason we learn that we can't make it happen, we'll obviously let people know on our social media pages. So you should find us on any, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all the things. Just RPG site, should be able to find us on one of those. Join our Discord, discord.gg/RPG site. Hit the link at the top of our homepage. Visit our homepage, rpgsite.net. That's where we cover all the news in written form and have all the trailers linked and all the screenshots shared. If you want to follow any of these games. And we'll obviously wish Josh well on his trip to Seattle. It's not too long of a trip for you, right?
It's nearby. Not that.
Gotcha. True. And then I know Scott's going there as well. He's not a podcast participant, but he might put up a few previews also. And then we'll wrap back up when they're back in town later in the summer or early fall. You can read up the review for Rogue Traders up on the site. We also have some previews coming imminently. By the time this podcast is published, they'll either be live or soon to be live from Adam's time in LA from Gamescom. And if there's nothing further on the docket, anything else before we close this out?
Can't wait to eat.
Yep, need to eat food.
There we go. All right. Until you hear from us next time, stay safe and take care. I'll talk to y'all later.
Later.